call the meeting of July 13th County Board Supervisors meeting to order. If you would please rise with me for the flag salute.
May please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome everybody back. After we got our budget down the state, still not got theirs done. We're still waiting to pay the breath on that. With that, we have no presentations this morning. However, we will go into public comment. And at our last meeting, we had some resolutions. And at this time, under public comment, I'm going to ask Supervisor Bianchi to please present those resolutions if the people are present. They are this time.
Yeah, if Bob Simonson and Gary Carner could come to the microphone, please. And I don't see Ray Bracken or Don Wright. So
this is their second chance.
This is their second chance if they're not here to get theirs taken home to them. These are resolutions recognizing Bob. Well, this is a resolution recognizing Bob Simonson for his exemplary work on the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. And this resolution is hereby offered and read because Bob Simonson served on the Los Osos Community Advisory Council for 12 years, and he undertook the job with the understanding it would only be for one or two. And whereas Bob Simonson created the concept plan for Baywood Park Central Business District, and whereas due to Bob Simonson's professional expertise and his understanding the process of sprawl and development, he is able to recognize the indicators and create methods to avoid the same pitfalls that may come along Los Osos Valley Road and in Los Osos. So now therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, does hereby recognize Bob Simonson for his exemplary work on the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. And I'll read Gary's, and then you can both come forward at the same time. Whereas Gary Carner served on the Los Osos Community Advisory Council for 12 years with the same understanding it would be for a very short period of time, and whereas Gary Carner developed the concept of a community-wide vision and co-chaired the development of the Los Osos Vision Statement, which distilled community attitude and opinion through an exhaustive series of neighborhood meetings into a document describing what Los Osos wanted to be. Whereas the unique qualities Gary Carner brought to Los Osos Community Advisory Council are his professional expertise, broad creative vision of what is possible, the ability to see from many points of view, and an organized, methodical approach to project management, which all fostered a better plan for Los Osos. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, does hereby recognize Gary Carner for his exemplary work on the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. So, you guys would like.
Is there any last parting comments you want to make for a few minutes?
You can make some parting comments if you like.
Well, I guess my parting comment would be, I wish we weren't so slow. It's probably partially because of me. But I do want to thank the board. This is a real honor. And I will be seeing you as the hearings for the Estero Plan update come through. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you for this honor and also thank you for your support of the Community Advisory Council over these many years, and urge you to listen very carefully to your advisory councils. They are the grassroots input to you, and they have a good feeling for their community. So keep up the good work. Thanks again.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm sorry that Ray Bracken wasn't able to be here this morning, because he not only was on the advisory council for 12 years, he served on the former South Bay Advisory Council for 15 years, was on the CSA 9 Council for 8 years, and he has approximately 40 years of service into the community of Los Osos.
Good. With that, then, we will continue on with our public comment. Again, reminding you to request the speak forms and the three-minute allocation for time. First, I have Maria Herrera, followed by Lori Heitzer.
My name is Maria Hey Herrera.
And tell me you're here.
What?
Tell me.
Oh.
For IHS worker.
Oh, I work with in home support service.
And tell me what you do. Hmm? And tell them what you do and where you work.
Oh, I need to pay more money because I make only $6.95 and it's hard work, and I work with sometimes 12 hours every day with disabled people. I take care of 5 people. So one is blind, other is in a wheelchair. I take care of this lady for 5 years. Another is disabled, got problems. And it's hard work. And I come from Orchid. I use the bus. I come 3 hours to come to San Luis Obispo every day and 3 hours to go home. And I work 12 hours sometimes every day for. And I snap people to take care because I need to vacation. I work with this lady for 5 years. And I ask many people, she wants to work, you want to take care of my people. And I love my people. This is the reason I work. Doctor tell me, it's time to rest. It's not, it's, you work a hard. It's, I can. The people need me. It's, and the reason I work, it's only $6.95 and the government pay late every time. Now I'm going to receive my check for June because it's busy, the office. And I love my work. This is the reason I'm here.
Thank you.
Tell them how you go and get the groceries, Maria.
Oh, I walk to that because I'm not dry. I don't know why I lived in this county for 40 years and I'm not dry. And I walk to the Escolaris 2 times a week. And it's hard.
Thank you very much. Lori Heitzer.
Hi, my name is Lori Heitzer, and I'm an IHS worker. And this is the first time that I'm here to address you on a positive note. In case you haven't noticed, Ms. Pinard, Thelma Smith wanted me to thank you for the thank you note. She truly appreciated that, and it was quite a surprise. If you notice, I haven't been here for a couple of weeks, and that's because Sissy had a few falls, and she just has been discharged from the hospital yesterday. And the reason why she was discharged is because her insurance ran out, and it wasn't because she was healed up from her wound. And they discharged her into my care and expected me to take care of her, but I want to show you on this sheet that in no place does the county specify that I am able to take care of an infectious wound. She has cellulitis again in her leg, and it says that I am authorized to bathe, oral hygiene, groom, and I am shopping, prepare meals, clean floors, medical appointments. But I am not a nurse, and I am not a doctor. And the only reason why she was discharged from the hospital is because her insurance ran out. And the only reason why she was not authorized to go to the inpatient therapeutic place that the doctor wanted to send her up behind General Hospital is because they don't take Medi-Cal patients. And so I threw a fit at the hospital. I said, you cannot discharge her again into my care. I said, I'm not comfortable with that. And if you want me to continue to work for this county, I need help because I am not comfortable being responsible for somebody's life, which that's what you're making me responsible for. And you know, that's what I know, and I have taken her to the family care clinic prior to these episodes twice now. This happened in November, and now it's happened again. I took her the day before to the family care clinic, and I took her 2 days before this time. Both times she's had to be admitted to the ER. And now this time they gave me a wound nurse to be seen, to see her. And it's only because I threw a fit with the social worker and said, I am not comfortable taking care of an infectious wound. And not only that, you, the county, has not authorized me to do it. And I am not trained to do it by this county. So now I have somebody in my care that has already used up 28 hours. I'm only authorized 40 hours a month. They've already used up 28 hours for this month. And she needs at least 2 hours worth of care per day. She is not able to walk all the time.
Thank you, Ms. Metzger. Ms. Heiser, thank you. Mary Greening, followed by Linda Hall.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. Welcome back from your well-deserved break. And I certainly continue to support the aspirations of the in-home supportive services workers. I think you've taken some good first steps, and a lot of the other steps are going to have to be taken in Sacramento. And I hope you will continue to lean in that direction and help the citizens with their lobbying efforts, and perhaps soon one of your number will actually be there to carry the torch. My main topic is, as a lot of people in this county are doing, I'm not the geek type that likes to spend hours and hours in front of computers, but yesterday I was doing so thanks to the Hearst Ranch Agreement finally being posted on the State of California Resources Department website. And I'd like to thank everyone who had a making in this. Obviously, a lot of time has gone into it. I'm not ready to take a position on it here because, as you know, I like to digest things thoroughly, and I feel that I've barely scratched the surface. But it brings up, there is a kind of a disadvantage with working on something that's on a screen. At least there is for those of us that didn't grow up with computers. And so it appears, but I probably am just missing how to navigate there. It appears to me that there are missing pieces, and I've heard other people speak of what seem to be pieces that are referred to in there that they can't find, and I don't know if there are actually missing pieces or if we just don't have the navigational tools, but I'm wondering, are there hard copy versions of this agreement somewhere? And the reason I'm asking you is because if there are such things, I think it would be very helpful if the county could acquire them and make them available in room 370 and in libraries around the county, particularly in all the libraries on the North Coast and also in libraries throughout the county, because this is of great interest to the people. It's going to be a real challenge to digest everything in 30 days, and it will be easier if we at least can pick up something that has covers on it and know what's inside it and be able to turn pages more easily than one does on a computer, know what's there, and know that we've seen it all. Whatever there is there to act on, know that it's all there in front of us. So that is a request I'm making of the county. I know this is right now in the hands of some state agencies, but the county is definitely at the table and is in a position, again, to influence what the state does and make this available for its citizens. Thank you.
Did you want to respond now to that, or do you want to get
away to the end? Yeah, okay. Eric, there were pieces of it missing yesterday. There were pieces of it missing, but as time goes by, they should be added. And you're right, this is a state agency that's doing it. I'm not, that I really don't know.
Mr. Chairman, we'll follow up on that today. And if we can get hard copies, then we'll make as many available through the library as we can, but I don't know whether we can get them, but we'll follow it up today.
Okay. Linda Hall, followed by Shirley Bianchi.
Good morning. My name is Linda Hall. Couldn't you just print that off the internet or wherever it is on the computer down at the law library and put some covers on it for the time being? Anyway, just an idea. Might take a couple of reams of paper, but it'd be quick. I come here today to speak about a situation that has had a lot of high profile in the press, and it is involving the concept of the Citizens Oversight Commission for the Sheriff's Department. I think that it is something that should hopefully come before your board fairly soon. It's been hanging out there for some time, and I think people are running out of energy to keep pushing it and so forth. I would assume that in as much as it would take the supervisorial vote of at least three to set up a commission, and I'm guessing that in that case there would be some funding for it. I'm not sure about that. Maybe you could answer that. It seems like it would. It's a touchy subject, but I don't think that turning the light on is ever a bad idea. I do believe that, in general, the public will make the right decision if they are informed. And thanks to AGP video, they are better informed than we ever have been. What triggered my coming down here today is that I ran into a former client that I sold a couple of houses to several years back, who's a studio musician in Los Angeles. And we had coffee together, and he told me that the Los Angeles Times newspaper had carried quite a spread about San Luis Obispo and the Sheriff's Department and so forth. And I didn't know that it had reached that far, but I do know that Cambria, now being advertised in our local paper as Carmel in the Pines, is very dependent on lodging facilities being filled up, restaurants. It's a tourist destination spot, and I seriously believe that these business owners are being impacted because of the bad press. And I think it's noticeable this summer. I do know a lot of people there. I've been there for 17 years and know them in the business. So with that, one quick remark here. I go back to being able to remember what happened in the 60s in Watts, I believe it was. Some guys got an automobile. They got a video camera that was a new technology at the time, and they went around and just did their thing and watched what the cops were doing. They were able to get a substantial federal grant.
Thank you, Ms.
And let me finish my sentence, please. And the only reason they failed was they went racist and wouldn't let any white people ride with them.
Thank you, Ms. Hall.
It's an idea for somebody.
Shirley Bianchi.
Yeah, I just wanted to announce the meeting, which will be Thursday night in Cayucas, relative to the Hearst Ranch Conservation Easement. There will be a barbecue at 4:30. Tickets are $5 each and benefit the Cleft Palate Fund, the local Lions Club. The doors will open at 5:30, and the meeting will start at 6. It's being chaired and authorized by the state resources agencies. So I would hope anyone who is interested in the Hearst Ranch Conservation Easement would go to the meeting Thursday night and find out from the people who wrote the easement what is in the easement. I think there's been a lot of rhetoric, and we need to have the facts out there. So thank you very much. I'm not doing the barbecue. I haven't a clue.
With that, then, we've concluded public comment for this morning. With that, we will go into the consent calendar item. Again, this is the opportunity for the public to speak on items on the consent calendar. Would ask that you have a request to speak form and remind you of the three-minute allotted time. With that, first is to present is Gary Rogers, followed by Eric Greening.
Thank you very much. Chairman Ovitt and members of the board. My name is Gary Rogers, and my wife and I live here in San Luis Obispo. I'm here today to say thank you for the resolution on consent agenda item B16, the resolution of approval of the Paul Wolf Accessibility Advocacy Award recognition. People with disabilities in this county, along with the whole United States, it's about one out of five. 20% of people have a disability and have some activity of daily living that they can't do. And accessibility is the one thing, and attitude is the one thing that helps get them out of their house and back to work and become a productive member of society. And the people that work hard to increase accessibility and universal access and change the attitude of people towards other people with disabilities need to be recognized, and the Paul Wolf Accessibility Advocacy Award does that. This will be presented this Saturday at Chumash Auditorium at 4 p.m., and I want to say thank you to the board members for approving this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Eric Greening.
Good morning again. I am Eric Greening, and my comments are on B19. It is a request by Supervisor Bianchi to allocate $2,000 from District 2 Community Project funds to the Morro Estuary Greenbelt Alliance to be used to develop a marine resource online map and interactive directory. And my only real comment is thank you. And the follow-up on that is this, I think, is the reason why these community projects funds should continue to be generously funded as a part of the county budget, because they often go for such important, vital community efforts that can't always be anticipated long-term in the budget process. As you know, I have been advocating for years and years for implementation of policies in our ag and open space element that are still languishing. Designate and protect a network of major ecosystems, wildlife corridors, and so on. And I am glad to see that citizens themselves are beginning the job with the marine environment, and that your board, and particularly Supervisor Bianchi, are stepping up and helping that effort. I hope it doesn't have to be the same kind of patchwork to do the rest of the job on the terrestrial side, but if it does, then please do generously fund the community projects funds so that we can at least get more pieces in the patchwork. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wish to speak on public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. Mr. Sajjan, any items for consideration? Ms. Bernard?
Mr. Ryan?
No.
Okay. Ms. Bianchi?
None. Thank you.
I have none. We'll accept
approval of the consent agenda.
Moved by Mr. Sajjan, seconded by Mr. Ryan. Roll call, please.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Pinelli?
Aye.
And Mr. Ovitt?
Aye. With that, then, we'll go into our first hearing item of this morning. With that, then, if you agree, please, Madam Chair.
The first item, item C1, is a hearing to consider a resolution authorizing the addition of delinquent service charges for county service area numbers 1, Old Galaxy, Napomo, sewer waste disposal, lighting, and drainage service to the 2004-05 property tax bills, 1st and 4th districts. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you.
Chairperson Ovitt and Honorable Board, for the record.
Sumatra.
Pardon me?
Sumatra.
Zanar 2. My name is Straith.
Oh, I couldn't read it from the site.
I'm sorry.
You need to give your name for the record. Yeah.
My name is Straith Smith Zanar 2 with the County Public Works Department. This item is a routine annual process to place county service area delinquent service charges on the tax roll. The Public Works Department is recommending that your board adopt a resolution which authorizes these delinquent service charges to be collected on the tax roll. These delinquencies represent less than one-half of 1% of total annual sewer revenues for County Service Area 1. The property owners subject to this collection method were notified by mail on May 20th and were given the opportunity to pay the amount owed. All required public notices have been met. This concludes my staff report. I would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, is there anyone from the public who would wish to present on this? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back for a motion.
Move adopt the staff's recommendation.
Second.
Seconded, moved by Mr. Shajian, seconded by Ms. Bianchi. Roll call.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye. Item C2.
Item C2 is a hearing to consider a resolution confirming amended assessments for the North Mesa AD Road District, San Miguel AD A Water District, and San Miguel AD B Water District, 1st and 4th Districts. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you.
Again, my name is Straith Smithson R2 with the County Public Works Department. This item is a routine annual process to place these charges on the tax roll. This assessment apportionment item deals with apportioning bond assessments from parcels that are being split or combined into new parcels. Today's hearing is for three purposes. First, to adopt the resolution confirming and amending, confirming and ordering amended assessments. The second purpose is to place the fee for preparing the amended assessments on the 2004-2005 tax roll. And thirdly, to direct the clerk to file the amended assessments with the county auditor's office no later than August 10th. The fee for preparing the apportionment is $228 for apportionments of 9 or less new parcels and $23 per each new parcel if there are 10 or more new parcels. The fee is part of the county fee ordinance adopted December 2, 2003. Notice of the assessment apportionment and the charges involved were mailed to all affected property owners on May 20th. All required public notices have been met. This ends my staff report, and I would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, is there any public wish to be recognized? Seeing none, we'll bring it back for a motion.
Move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Shajian, seconded by Ms. Bianchi. All in favor. Roll call, please.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye. Item C3, please.
Item C3 is a hearing to consider a resolution authorizing the collection of service charges within county service areas 1, 1A, 1F, 7A, 18, and 21, all districts. And recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you. Ms. Zanartu.
I get this right yet.
Again, for the record, my name is Straith Smithson R2 with the County Public Works Department. This is the third and final routine annual process to place county service area service charges on the tax roll. The Public Works Department is recommending that your board adopt a resolution which establishes the 2004-2005 service charges within certain county service areas and authorizes placing these charges on this year's tax roll. The recommended service charges are the same as last year, with the exceptions of county service areas 7A and 18 sewer disposal districts, which incorporate a 2.5 inflationary adjustment as per previously adopted rate ordinances. All required public notices have been met, and this concludes my staff report.
Thank you. I do have a request to speak for him, Linda Hall.
Yes, my name is Linda Hall. These are very... hard to understand, I think, for the general public items, and something that ordinarily seems to appear or used to appear on the consent agenda. You're saying you're collecting from areas that are just numbers with letters with no names, and I'm speaking of C3 just specifically. The others were fairly obtuse too, but anyway. Service charges for sewer, and is this something new, or is this something that you just do every year? Can you expand on that a little bit?
Certainly, I would be happy to. County service area 1, 1A, 1F are all in the Napomo area, and this deals with various lighting and sewer and waste disposals. Again, this is a routine annual process that we have done each year, and this has always been set by public hearing. County service area 7A is the Oak Shores area. County service area 18 is the Country Club in San Luis Obispo.
and County Service Area 21 is the Cambria area.
Thank you. And those are listed also within the staff's report?
Yes, they are.
Thank you. And the other thing is they're put on the consent calendar to notice the public hearing, and this is the actual public hearing, and the public has the opportunity to come speak. Is there any other public who wishes to speak on this? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved by Ms. Bianchi, seconded by Mr. Ryan. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye. I'm trying to look. You're representing then staff for the next item, D4?
That's correct.
D4.
And Carol will be here also.
Let's go ahead and we'll read item C4.
Item C4 is a hearing to consider an appeal by R. Burke Corporation of the Planning Commission's disapproval to allow expansion of an existing construction storage yard and the establishment of a concrete crushing and recycling use in the commercial service land use category on Farmhouse Lane in San Luis Obispo Planning Area, 3rd District. The recommendation is to deny the appeal.
Thank you. With that, then we'll have staff. Let me go over procedure. The reason I took a few moments because I didn't see anybody really here that was representing this, and they just all came at the last moment. We will have staff's report. We will then go to the appellant for their presentation. And the appellant is the applicant, so we'll allow 10 minutes. And when they're finished, we will then open it up to the public. When the public's finished, then there will be an ample time for the appellant applicant to respond, and we'll bring it back to the board. With that, Mark, Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John McKenzie, Planning Department. I'd like to start with a housekeeping item. A packet was submitted to your board this morning, which included some draft, actually not the draft minutes of the previous Planning Commission. It's actually the raw notes. Those draft minutes have not yet been completed, but to provide your board with that information, we got that to you this morning. We do have additional copies available for others or your board if you did not receive those copies. It also includes one letter of support for the project.
Mr. McKenzie, for clarification reasons, those were given to us upstairs.
That's correct. Thank you. A request has been made for a conditional use permit to allow for, one, a 2.4-acre expansion of an existing 2.7-acre construction storage yard, and, two, establishment of a concrete recycling and stockpiling over about 4 acres of the expanded storage yard area. The existing construction storage yard is currently allowed to store equipment and materials related to construction. In addition to equipment, the yard is allowed to stockpile concrete rubble as a low-grade road fill material that can be used as is. This has a very limited road construction application. When this material is processed through a crusher, as proposed, the concrete rubble would be recycled into a highly desired Class 2 road-based product. Activities associated with this proposed use include trucking rubble to the site, tractors moving piling material on-site, crushing of rubble, initially with a tractor pincer attachment, then later into a portable crushing unit, and lastly hauling the finished product away. Rubble material is stockpiled until there is sufficient material for the portable crusher to be brought on site on an as-needed basis, probably several times a year for 2 to 3 weeks at a time. On April 22nd, on a 3-2 vote, the Planning Commission recommended denial of this request due to its industrial nature and incompatibility with surrounding rural residential neighborhood. On the first slide, the Burke project is located on the northeast side of Highway 227 off of Farmhouse Lane, south of the Airport Drive, and directly east of the San Luis Obispo Airport. The slide shows the existing yard and surrounding uses. Residences exist to the north and east. Commercial uses within the city exist to the west. Airport is to the west also. The red dashed area represents a recently approved SEN conditional use permit for I think it's 100,000 square foot building, a couple of buildings for commercial use. The blue line depicts the Morobito Burke track map that was also recently approved for a 26 lots for future commercial development, of which there's some lots. The Burke project is a few of those lots. The light blue dotted area shows a pending request to change from agriculture to residential rural to allow these 10-acre lots to further subdivide to 5-acre parcels. The property is within the commercial service land use category. It is surrounded by the same category to the south and west. The agricultural category exists to the north and east. The subject property is within the urban reserve line. The light green shaded area denotes the existing construction yard boundaries. The dark green area shows the proposed expansion area. This slide shows the boundaries in which the concrete recycling and associated storage piles are proposed to be located within the larger expanded storage yard. Landscaping is proposed around the entire perimeter of the development with a range of fast-growing evergreen ground cover shrubs and trees. Recycling uses are required to be at least 500 feet from existing residences. Scaled from this aerial, the measured distance from the closest existing residence to the proposed recycling area is at least 600 feet. When measured to the existing edge of the construction yard, it falls to less than 400 feet for one of the residences. This type of separation is intended to minimize noise and odor impacts from recycling operations. No odor impacts are expected from this type of operation. Noise studies were completed for the proposed operation. These studies do show that the proposed 9-foot earthen berm can effectively reduce noise impacts from the crushing operation. Mitigation requires that tractors stay below 6 feet from the finished grade. It has been observed historically that on-site tractors, when consolidating the rubble materials, do get on top of these 12-foot high piles, which makes for this particular mitigation unknown if it's going to be effective by telling the operators to stay below the 6-foot level. This slide, the next slide here, provides information on what exists now as far as the berming and fencing heights. The red lines show the existing 9-foot height of the berm and slatted fence. The proposed project, the yellow line, an arrow indicates a 9-foot berm and with a 6-foot fence on it, which you can see here would visually screen a lot of the proposed development. This last picture just shows a distance shot from Highway 227, with the green being the existing storage yard and the orange, which it doesn't show up too well on the screen, sorry, of the expanded area. The applicant is appealing the Planning Commission's decision based on their findings for denial, which include the use is being incompatible with the surrounding residential neighborhood, the proposed use is industrial in nature and not appropriate for commercial service category. Based on moderate water usage, there may be insufficient water to provide for landscaping, stockpile watering, and crushing processing. The use will result in excessive noise. The use will generate excessive traffic. Elements of the recycling use could be closer than the required 500 feet from the existing residence. I would like to make a clarification on the enclosure issue, which has been discussed at previous Planning Commission meeting and documentation in the file. In the San Luis Obispo area plan standards, there are two uses related to recycling. One is recycling collection stations, and the other is recycling and scrap. The proposed use would fall under recycling and scrap use. Under the recycling collection station use, there is a provision to require that there be an enclosure as a part of that kind of use. Such a requirement is not required for the recycling and scrap use. Initially, staff incorrectly requested that an enclosure be required, and subsequently this issue has been dropped when the use was correctly identified. Staff has concluded that the findings made by the Planning Commission are adequate, and based on these findings, it is recommended that the project be denied, and that would conclude staff's presentation.
Any questions, staff? Seeing none, then I'm sorry, Mr. Sajjan, go ahead.
Does enclosure mean covering it on four sides or having a roof on the top?
There is no specific definition for enclosure, and there is discretion on if you could say that an enclosure could be the bermed and fencing area is a definition of enclosure, or it could include a roof. There is no specific definition that I was able to find in the ordinance.
Would you be able to go back to your slide that shows the foot, the distance between the residence and the operation, please? Yes. 600 feet is between the resident, not necessarily to the corner of the property. Is that a legal description of the distance?
That's correct. It's in this case, there are provisions in the ordinance, depending upon the land use category, it is a property, it's at the category boundary, or it's at the residence. In this case, you're within, but under the being in the agriculture category, it goes to where the residence is located. If it was a residential category, it would be where the category starts. Okay. So in this case, it's the ag zoning.
The zoning is making this what it is.
Yes.
600 feet. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, Ed?
One other, if I may, the view shed. I know the entire 227 and Orcutt Edna area is within a view shed. Is view shed something you look to see, or you drive to see, or you got to be able to see as you drive by, or do we have a definition of such?
View shed is a fairly subjective issue. We do look at both the foreground. You have, it depends on, you know, where the highly scenic areas are. In this case, it's going to be more of the background. The Santa Lucia Hills backdrop is where the scenic qualities are. So that's where we're focusing our concerns for the view shed. We also need to look at the public, you know, the view shed starts where the public roads are. Heavily used public roads is what we focus on. So it would be more from the 227 vantage to the site, and then looking at mitigation. In this particular area plan, the railroad has also been identified as an important vantage. So we would be looking for screening around the entire development, because that's on the opposite side. That on this picture would be to the right of the picture, to the east of the development.
Thank you.
That's enough. Okay. With that, then we'll go to the applicant or applicant's representative. And again, a reminder, 10 minutes, please.
Yes, good morning, Chairman Ovitt, members of the board. My name is Carol Florence with Oasis Associates, located in San Luis Obispo, representing Arbert Corporation. On their behalf, I'm asking that the board uphold the applicant's appeal of the Planning Commission's decision based initially on what I believe to be some undisputed facts, the first being that recycling, whether it be glass or paper or aluminum, or in this case, asphalt and concrete, is a state and county-wide goal that this community has taken very seriously. Secondly, recycling is an allowable use within the commercial service zone, and that provisions for its use are governed by the land use ordinance, and in this case, mitigation measures and conditions as detailed in the environmental determination and staff's initial recommendation for approval that is located midway in your staff report, specifically on page 163. And actually, that was the staff report presented to the Planning Commission on March 25th of this year. Third, that the Burke's construction yard, while permitted and constructed in 1997, is really now much part of a much larger and recently approved 58-acre commercial subdivision, whose approval was based on a rigorous environmental review and whose are bound really by a set of very specific mitigation measures and conditions. Fourth, that the applicant is committed to improving the situation and being a good neighbor, not only to the few residences that are adjacent to the properties, but the future commercial development that includes 500,000 square feet on the Morabito Burke project, as well as 180,000 square feet on the Sen Glick project to the north of this parcel. And lastly, it is an undisputed fact that the applicant is committed to strictly adhering to the proposed conditions and mitigation measures and has expressed a willingness to sunset the recycling component should he fail to perform accordingly. If I've represented the facts to you correctly, what remains is the potential conflict that tends to be articulated whenever a project is located adjacent to residential uses who, for the most part, are located in a rural setting and who have enjoyed little to no development. But we take the neighbors' concerns very carefully and considerately, and I believe that over the last 3 years working with planning staff and other department staff and a variety of consultants, that solutions to address the potential conflicts have been analyzed, identified, and are now part of the project description. I'd like to acknowledge the difficulty that staff had transforming findings for approval into findings for denial, and that unfortunately ignored the support that the project received from Public Works, the Ag Commissioner's Office, the Airport Manager, Air Pollution Control District, and the Integrated Waste Management Authority. And for the record, I'd like to speak directly to the explanations on pages 3 and 4 of your staff report, because I believe that they misrepresent the facts. Item 1, the project will not generate excessive noise. There were 4 previously prepared acoustical reports that were not solely an academic exercise, but were partially based on real-life measurements taken during, if you recall, an allowed demonstration that occurred on the site probably 2 years ago. This critically important information led to the design of the 9-foot-high berm with the fencing, with the vegetation along the entire perimeter that will enclose the entire space. Again, this is a performance-based condition so that the recycling operation would not be allowed to commence until the qualified noise expert determines that the adequacy of the mitigation measures. Item 2, the project will not generate traffic safety concerns. Traffic generation and safety concerns were a very big part of the environmental analysis for the commercial subdivision. And again, Public Works, who worked closely with the Planning Department and Caltrans, determined that the small amount of traffic generated by this project would not have a significant impact and that the project-specific and cumulative traffic impacts had been mitigated. Item 3, the project will not consume substantial amounts of water in an area with limited water availability. I will grant you that we have a very complicated and intricate formula for water use on the commercial subdivision, and while dense vegetative screening is absolutely a part of this project description, I am pleased to tell you today that the Morabito-Burke project, along with the Senglek project to the north, have entered into an agreement with the Fierro Lane Water Company to accept reclaimed water that will arrive on site in a secondary state that we will treat to a tertiary level and utilize for landscape and dust control purposes. Item 4, the proposed recycling use is closer than the 5-foot minimum for my residence, and I won't go into that because I think John did an adequate job describing that aspect to you since that was a point of discussion at the Planning Commission hearing. One thing I did want to bring to your attention that we are really looking at the vegetative berm as an interim mitigation measure because the applicant's long-term goal, and I would say that it's more short-term than long-term at this point, has always been to design and construct their own office on this site that would essentially act as a very permanent visual and acoustical buffer. Item 5 on the list, although I can't say no dust will be generated due to the lack of available water, I can tell you that the use of reclaimed water, and we will have an abundant amount of that, will more than adequately reduce the PM10 mitigation or the dust mitigation. Again, this is a performance-based condition. This project is regulated not only, of course, by the Planning Department, but certainly by the Air Pollution Control District, who knows when this temporary piece of equipment actually knows before this piece of equipment arrives on site and has an opportunity to come and monitor that as well. Item 6, we're talking about the view shed of the Santa Lucia Mountains and the rural character of the surrounding ag zone. I just want to paint a picture for you that the applicant's proposed yard expansion will not be the only development in this area. They will eventually be surrounded on three sides by commercial development. Part of that development is on the western boundary of our closest neighbor, and the build-out, obviously, of the Morabito Burke project, which plans are currently being reviewed by the Public Works Department. The other aspect I think that is important to bring to your attention that I'm sure you're all well aware of, and that is the airport expansion that will be occurring directly across Broad Street on the west side of Broad Street. So I think that you can see, although we experience what appears to be a rural setting at this point, within the next 3 to 5 years will substantially change in complexion. Item 7 and the last item, this use, when the conditions and mitigation measures are in place, will not be an incompatible land use. I think the project's proposed recycling use is really no different than previously approved projects, the Troche project in Napomo as well, actually in South County, and the Granite project between Templeton and the city of Paso Robles, that considered asphalt and concrete crushing as a type of recycling. And I can tell you, working in the solid waste industry on behalf of Coal Canyon Landfill for over 14 years, that the California Integrated Waste Management Board, that our local Integrated Waste Management Authority, and the County Solid Waste Management Coordinator all consider and define the storage, crushing, and reuse of asphalt and concrete aggregate as recycling. I want to thank you very much for your consideration this morning. I realize that not only the large commercial subdivision, but certainly this project has taken years to go through the process, and there's a tremendous amount of detail involved, and I just want to ask again for you to uphold our appeal of the Planning Commission's decision and make myself available for any questions or comments that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bianchi?
Yep. Carol?
Yes.
Where will Where will the non-potable water be obtained? From where are you going to get it from?
Actually, I'm not sure you're familiar with the Fierro Lane Mutual Water Company, which is to the northeast of the project. They handle wastewater and water. There are
a mutual water company,
yes. So they generate a tremendous amount of wastewater that they treat to a secondary purpose, which we will be piping actually to the project site. Thank you.
Mr. Sajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You made a point of noise, dust, traffic. Speaking of noise, would this be hours during daytime, weekdays, weekends? Give us an idea of the hours of operation, if you may, and I have a couple other questions.
The hours of operation were clearly defined in the original conditions to the permit, and we accepted those.
You have accepted those?
Yes.
After school hours and prior to dusk or the end of the business day?
Maybe John could look that up for us. They were specific times on specific days.
And no, it's not in operation on weekends, is it?
That's correct. It was specific to the crushing portion of the operation that could be expanded to other noise-generating uses if your board so desires, but it was from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday for the crushing operation portion.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Looking at both the future project, if I may call that, would it give access to this site from a different traffic pattern?
There are two access points to the 58-acre commercial subdivision, one that would be a relocated farmhouse lane, which actually will be aligned with the new access to the airport expansion, and there will be a second access point, I'd say midway in the project, to the south.
When you mentioned that APCD has supported this project, and you also made a point of the dust, how you would control it, I'm assuming that APCD, prior to them supporting this project, they look into that dust control and how would it take place? Would they, Mr. McKenzie?
A referral was sent to them. They responded with recommendations to deal with the dust, and there are dust control measures that are on the crusher unit itself. Typically, there's a mister type arrangement as the material is brought through the crushing unit. There's as well as required spraying of stockpiles of material would be required in this very windy area.
And the equipment related to noise, obviously we have a noise ordinance. Have we tested the equipment that if it was to be located here? And does it come within the county required noise ordinance?
As Carol indicated, they did do a experimental processing of the crusher unit itself, and that was the focus of the noise studies. There was a little bit of information on the tractors themselves, and I think that's kind of where we might be a little light on information, but as far as if they were on top of the stockpiles, but studies were done. It was identified that they could meet those requirements at the property boundary with the proposed project.
Thank you.
Mr. Ryan?
The two access roads that you referred to, those will both be paved roads that the trucks will be coming and leaving on?
Yes.
Mr. Bernard?
Question, please, just refresh my mind. The year that this operation started,
the actual storage yard was approved in 1997.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, then, we are now going to go to the public. And again, I'd ask a request to speak form and to remind you that we have allocated a 3-minute time frame for you. First one is Bud Wampler, followed by Cherise Troche.
Yeah, my name is Bud Wampler. I live at 10 Verde Drive, San Luis Obispo. I recently replaced my driveway at home, and in so removing the existing concrete I had in there, I had about three choices to go over the hill to Santa Margarita, which cost a lot of money and pollution going over the hill for trucks hauling that. I had the other choice is Coal Canyon Landfill at $50 per cubic yard, which I could not afford. And then the other choice was that beautiful Philbin site on Santa Fe Road. And I didn't think I wanted to add to the problems that's already there because I was afraid one of these days I might have to go back and get it again. So I think that this process facility needs to be here in San Luis Obispo so that the people around the area can use it without having to go miles and miles away and creating more pollution. And I think that you guys have the authority to mitigate any problems that you might see involved in it, you know, like dust or noise or trucks and whatnot, that you have the authority to control that. So I would suggest that you would approve this facility. Thank you.
Thank you. Cherise Troche, followed by Roy Ogden.
Good morning. My name is Cherise Troche with Troche Recycling and Troche Ready Mix. And we have been operating in a commercially zoned land use in Napomo. And I don't want to stress the importance of recycling. I think that's been stressed enough. And just to give you an idea, we are keeping over 60,000 tons of waste out of our landfills on an annual basis. So that's how important this type of operation, this facility is. I'm not here to speak as a competitor, but hopefully as an advocate and an industry leader, and to stress the importance of the fact that I think Mr. Burke will find once he gets, hopefully, if he gets approved to operate in this area, that he will also need to find an outlet for the material. And we have a lot of competition in Santa Barbara County and San Luis County that are not taking the steps and going through the proper channels of the permitting process that needs to happen and are not being regulated because of, it, quite frankly, the cost involved and the process that it takes to go through getting this type of operation in someone's own backyard. I've been to the other hearings. I've been to the Planning Commission meeting when this was brought to the commission, and there was a lot of support for this project. I've heard the residents' concerns. I think Mr. Burke has gone to extreme measures to make sure that their issues and concerns are recognized and mitigated. So I'm here to speak on behalf of supporting this, hopefully appealing, if that's the proper terminology, the denial of this project. And also I want to support what he's doing. I think it's important. We believe strongly in what we're doing and what we're doing to help the community and help the environment. And I believe that Mr. Burke, once, if he is indeed approved, will go to the extreme measures also of making sure he's producing a Class 2 base that will meet Caltrans spec, which will then be inspected by the county inspectors, hopefully accepted. We've got a lot of issues, and this is a big concern of ours with finding an outlet for this product, and I think that he will add to the positive side of making sure that we're doing the right thing in recycling. Thank you.
Thank you. Roy Ogden, followed by Jim Grammer.
Good morning, Chairman Ovid.
Good.
Honorable members, Roy Ogden, 656 Santa Rosa.
Did you have fun in Washington yesterday?
Sorry, I didn't get back to you.
No, that's fine.
I got back on time, though.
Yeah, good.
At any rate, no, it wasn't fun, but I completed the task. Thanks. You know, I think overall it's very important to consider that it was a very significant thing for Mr. Burke and the other developers to push through their combined 650,000 square foot commercial use development. And you don't see any of his partners in that development here supporting him today. That's because of the distinction you're going to see between the type of use that he's asking you to approve today and what was approved for that 650,000 square feet. You'll also notice that there was no appeal of that development. Why? Because it was very carefully scrutinized by the neighbors, and we made some compromises, and so the Planning Commission approval was enough. But this is a vastly different thing, and you know, crushing concrete and asphalt next to other residences and right there in the viewshed of Highway 227. The commercial development that is seen by the 650,000 square foot tract that's been approved is a far cry from what's being proposed today. It's something that will allow the property owners to use their property, but in a way that works for our community and in a way that works for the neighbors. Approving a recycling facility, and let's get into the recycling facility a little bit, next to these residences is like putting an offshore oil rig off of Avila. Can we use more petroleum? Probably. Big business certainly can. But is that the right place for it? And is that good for our community? And is that good for our environment? No way. Is this recycling? Well, I heard an argument today that the other two rock crushing facilities went through under the recycling category. But guess what? No neighbors. No one scrutinized that classification as rock crushing. Why? But no one lived there. So it really didn't matter. Those facilities aren't next to residential uses. Does someone have to drive farther to use them? Yes. Is that perfect? No. But it's also not perfect putting it in, as someone just said, their own backyard. And it's going to be in the backyard of the residents' long-time use. Now, is this recycling? Well, recycling, I can see taking the blue bin, dumping it out, and separating bottles and paper. Not a lot of noise, not a lot of dust, not a lot of traffic. But what we're doing here is we're taking pieces of concrete, asphalt rubble, into metal trucks, driving them 40 to 50 trucks per day down a road that serves 10 families. It's not a paved road. I heard there was discussion about two paved roads today. That's for the other tract, and they're trying to mix the other tract, the 650,000 square foot tract that's been approved for the future, with the recycling that he wants to start tomorrow.
Mr. Ogden, I'm going to ask you to conclude, please.
Okay. Does it have to be enclosed? There's no evidence that there's a distinction between the use and the actual collection center. So, yes, under the code, it has to be enclosed. The distance, it's 500 feet from a residential use. It doesn't say it's 500 feet from a residence. Is there going to be noise? Yes. The noise studies all show that the noise is louder than the county allows. Then they've said there's going to be mitigation measures that will be monitored by an expert hired by the applicant. So the neighbors are going to continue to have to monitor that monitor. The neighbors have spent a lot of money trying to show you that this needs to be somewhere else. And we ask that you strongly consider the fact that this use is an eyesore. Mr. Burke has not landscaped. It's in the public record in my exhibits that he's failed to landscape as required by the late 90s. He's not going to do it now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ogden. I do have a question here for you.
Yes.
I have a couple. The year these houses were built, what year?
Well, the original farmhouse was, probably.
These ones that are under discussion?
Well, Mr. Grammer's here, and he can tell you more specifically, but I'm going to guess it's from the 70s, but that's a guess.
Okay. And then just a question on trying to follow the logic on some of this. If Mr. Burke is a partner in the next phase of the development of the commercial sector,
yes,
then wouldn't it be in his best interest to make sure that that noise was absolutely kept there, or he's going to be rendering his own spaces unrentable?
Well, Mr. Burke is a repeat offender, as I showed you in my letter. He's not followed any of the codes. He's actually started the crushing without any permit for that. So I don't think he really cares. I think all he wants to do is try to make a profit there when he could do that somewhere else.
Well, I'm trying to understand, because we do want to encourage recycling, and yet I'm really struggling with this because there's obviously you could take both sides. So what your testimony is really important.
Okay.
To both of you. We had the temporary trial run of this. And the first round got down to within 2 decibels of what the county had said, that it was its limit. And so with additional berming, in other words, the idea that this isn't going to start up until they can actually show that it can get down to, I believe it's 62 or 67 decibels. You can refresh my memory. So if that actually occurs and then that noise is not a factor, that's on the county's watch to make sure that decibel level can be met. So could you respond to that?
Absolutely. There are lots of mitigation measures. You've probably never seen so many mitigation measures as you have here, because they're trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. But what they've said is, we can use noise blankets. We can require the drivers not to do this or that. And sure, maybe if it's perfectly done, they can slip under the wire. But who's going to watch them every day? The county's not going to be out there monitoring them every day. They have to self-monitor.
Okay, then help me understand something. If the berms are built and the crushing machine is in operation, then when you test that out, it is itself already self-monitoring. In other words, the machines work at a certain decibel level, and the berms will mitigate to a certain decibel level. So it's not like something that has a great deal of variability. So, again, could you help me out with that one?
Absolutely, and I appreciate the clarification. No, they use noise blankets. They require, and it's not just the crusher. It's the 40 to 50 truck trips per day. Just think, a truck's going to haul in tons of this stuff. Then it's got to go over and be stockpiled. So a piece of heavy equipment like a bulldozer or a front loader has to, this is all metal and concrete, has to take this stuff off the truck and dump it, make a pile. Then a hydraulic pincher on one of these pieces of heavy equipment has to crush this concrete and rubble down to smaller chunks. Then it has to be loaded with a bulldozer, a top loader, into the crusher. So you've got all that noise. You've got backup noise. You've got the requirements in the proposed conditions require the drivers of this equipment to do some or to not do so many things. So what I'm saying is it's not self-monitoring. It's not simply setting up the crusher and putting up a berm and trying that. There's a lot of other things that make noise out there, a lot of noise.
Okay, then let me take this one step further. We have two parts. One is the existing operation that's out there, which already brings the trucks in, dumps them off, and then theoretically you could go in and pick up uncrushed aggregate and take it out of there. So you have an existing operation that's not part of this application. The part that's part of this application is the crushing factor with the machine that comes in and the berms that will
monitor that. So when we, I really want to take you through this.
And I appreciate the opportunity.
If there's something that's a problem with the existing operation, that's not under our purview today.
Actually, it is. Can I say why?
All right, go ahead.
Because there is no quote-unquote official existing operation. What's going on out there is illegal. If you read Exhibit, I think, 12 of my letter, you'll see that when Mr. Burke applied for this use, he said, look, even if I'm not approved, I'd like to use some concrete, you know, some aggregate Class 2 base in my yard. Can I bring enough in just to use in my yard? And then Exhibit 13 is Jim Lopes saying, yeah, you can bring in enough to use in your yard. But he's brought in thousands of tons, and he's not just brought it in. He's crushed it, but he's not just crushed it with pinchers. He's exported it to construction sites. So there is no existing. All this is approved for is a storage yard. For example, he can drive his bulldozer in there and park it. But there's no application, no approval for him to bring in the concrete rubble. He has abused Lope's letter. And if you read my letter, you'll see that Art Trinidad wrote him a letter, that's Exhibit 14, and said, Mr. Burke, you're not allowed to do this. You're only allowed to bring in what you can use on the surface of your storage yard. That did nothing. So Mr. Trinidad from the county enforcement sent out one of his assistants, and this is all described in my letter as well. And the assistant was told by Mr. Burke, hey, I can bring in as much as I want. I have no limitations. This is all allowed. So that's our problem, that this applicant is a repeat offender. He doesn't care what the codes say or the letters say. So we can't trust that he's even going to comply with the minimum of these conditions. His existing stockpiling and storage of asphalt and concrete is based upon Exhibit 13, a Lopes letter, and he has abused that because he did what he wanted to. So there is no existing approved use other than storage of construction equipment, and that ain't what he's doing out there.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Jim Grammer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Grammer, 1165 Farmhouse Lane, San Luis Obispo. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here on behalf of the residents of the immediate area for this proposed project. We own the residential property that is adjacent to the Burke property and live in the house that is less than 500 feet away from that property. We've already experienced the impacts from these proposed activities, as Burke Construction is already engaged in the stockpiling and crushing of material in their yard in violation of their existing use permit. Imagine heavy construction equipment operating all day long on the street in front of your house. You'll have a pretty good idea what it's like to live out there. It's unpleasant, to say the least. County code enforcement, as you've heard, has notified Burke Construction of violations to the existing use permits a number of times. I personally have had to call Rob Burke on several occasions to stop late night and early morning equipment operation. Your packages should include letters from the area residents stating our unanimous opposition to this project. They also outline our concerns. Those concerns were shared and considered by the Planning Commission, who we feel did an excellent job considering this project at their hearing. The commission was very uncomfortable with the categorization of this as a recycling project. We agree with that assessment and are equally uncomfortable. By Burke Construction's own admission, their primary goal is to manufacture for sale road base. As we've already experienced, this manufacturing process involves intensive use of heavy construction equipment. As you've heard, large tracked excavators break down large pieces of material, large wheel loaders move that material around, semi-trucks come and go constantly, dumping the material and taking it away. It is clear to us that this type of operation should be classed as heavy manufacturing. The commission really did their homework on this project. They highlighted Burke Construction's failure to comply with the conditions and mitigations of their current use permit, and that's been ongoing for 7 years now by my calculation. They questioned the presentation of the project as recycling, and they took the applicant specifically to task for already crushing materials at their facility in violation of their current use permit. The commission clearly expressed their position that the proposed project was not compatible with the rural residential neighborhood. Although there was a dissenting vote on a procedural question, The commission's opinion to deny the project was unanimous. In conclusion, I ask you to please uphold your planning commission's decision and staff recommendation by denying this appeal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is anyone else in the public wish to speak to this item? Seeing none, and we'll close public comment, and we'll bring it back to the appellant applicant for our final remarks. And I'd like to keep him within 5 minutes, if you could, please.
Chairman Carol Florence, just for the sake of accuracy of the facts, my firm processed the granite project in Templeton, and I can tell you that we did have neighbors work with us toward a project that would be compatible, because although we were surrounded by other commercial and industrial ventures, we still had to work with our neighbors to make sure that we had a project that was compatible. So to say that, these other projects had no neighbors is really not accurate. And secondly, my last comment has to do with monitoring and self-monitoring and et cetera. The whole point of having mitigation measures is that there's another component to that, and that's the monitoring component. Whereas the county acts as the agency that retains the third-party consultant, and the applicant does, in fact, fund that, but that consultant is responsible to the county. I wanted to make that very clear. And if you have any other questions of me, I think I will close with that. And I want to thank you for your careful and considerate deliberation this morning.
Thank you. Do you have a copy of this, clerk? Does the clerk have a copy of that? Thank you. With that, then, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. Any comments? We'll start with Mr. Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McKenzie, the road condition, if this was to go forward, is the road going to be asphalted, sidewalks, or has nothing to do with this particular project, and it has a lot to do with the future projects?
This project does not include any provisions for asphalting or chip sealing or paving of any kind at this point. However, as has been discussed, there is the track map that is also in the works, and as a part of that track map, there will be some road paving requirements which will provide access to this property and will be paved.
Now, is that project going forward, or do we know much about it?
The project has been tentatively approved. The track map has been tentatively approved. It's now in the phase of recordation, and as a part of that recordation process, there will be some requirements for paving, and which would include some of these internal roads that have been referred to. I can just show you just kind of roughly where those roads are if you needed to know that. But
if it's not too much to ask, I would like to see that, please.
Just on this aerial, the yellow dashed lines show the approximate layout for that tract.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Ryan.
Just a number of things, comments. On the site itself, is it where it should be? According to our policies, you can put this type of recycling there, and it is recycling, because if you're taking something that has already been used as walls or road, or as Mr. Wampler said, a driveway, and you pull it out and you crush it up and you turn it back into a class 2 base and something is usable again, that is recycling, and we need to do that to meet state mandates of stuff we have going to the landfill. We're required to do this. Is this the right place for that? Well, there's a question on that. They're there now. You look at it, it's a fairly open field, what we have right now, but you look at the track map that's been approved out there and the buildings that are approved coming in the commercial area, and in the future, I would say that's not going to be the right place. At the present time, I think it's something that that could be used. You're talking about noise. I believe the noise would be mitigated with the walls. We've done the testing. You're going to have natural barriers, which are the berms, and also your vegetative barriers that will be put up. Traffic. There will be traffic coming in and out of that site. I believe that that we should, if we approve this, should require the traffic coming in and out of the site to be on a paved road. You know, so that way if these buildings aren't built for another 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you don't have 40 trucks a day coming in on a dirt road. And, you know, they're in the construction company. They pave roads. They can do it. It's real easy for them to do that road. The other thing on traffic, if you don't put one of these sites in, you're talking about 40 to 50 trucks who are driving to Templeton or to the far south end of the county, hauling this material down, having it crushed, recycled, and then hauling it back. So pollution, you're getting more pollution with those trucks going throughout the county. You're getting more traffic with those trucks going throughout the county. So what I would like to see us do is I'd like to see us approve this. The one thing that I see changing is that whole area is changing, and it's going to continue to change out there. And today this could work out there. In a couple years, it may not work out there. What I would suggest is that we put a sunset on the approval, 7 years from the time that they have met the conditions to actually start recycling. And at that period of time, that permit expires, and they have to do a reapplication if they're going to continue to go there. And I imagine that site is going to go away, and it may go away prior to the 7 years, but I believe at 7 years you won't see them come back and apply to do it there. They'll actually go forward with the buildings and the commercial uses that have been approved on the track map. I think it's very good that they've gone to the water company and are going to be using recycled water. I think that is a very positive thing for that area. But anyhow, those are my comments.
Okay, Ms. Bianchi?
Yeah, I have a question. In the testimony, we understand that they are not permitted for this now, for that they have an action out there, or they're engaging in activities that are not permitted. Is that correct? And the reason, let me tell you the reason I'm asking the question, because you may be able to answer at the same time. It's my understanding that we cannot take an action or permit something for which there is an illegal activity taking place on a piece of property, that the one has to be cleaned up. The one illegal activity has to be stopped or cleaned up or whatever one does to it before you can take another action.
I think my understanding is
there's no pending. I'm sorry.
Well, I want to hear staff, what staff has to say.
There is no pending violation currently on the property, so there's nothing currently to hold the project up. The stockpiling of the material that's on site is allowed. It's a construction storage yard, equipment and storage yard. Construction materials and equipment storage yard. So it does allow to store construction materials. This is considered.
Well, that's fine, but I understand that they're crushing and then transporting off site, which would they're not permitted for.
We from previous testimony that there is from the applicant indicating that there are these pincher devices to do some very basic further breaking down of the material from large pieces to small pieces. It has been done. Staff does not concur with the applicant in that that's an allowed use. We feel that is a part of a recycling processing use, which is going on.
And
has
transporting
gone on.
It off-site.
The transporting off-site, it would be an allowed use, as a material that could be used as, a fill material in its current state. That's what we'd expect any construction material to be transported off-site for use, whether it be this kind of material or some other material that's stored on-site. It would also be transported off.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Sajjan?
A couple of questions, and I'm going to ask the applicant maybe respond to that question as well. Mr. McKenzie, before we go to Ms. Florence, I recall when we did the Tolosa Winery conference, had a lot of say, what is their input on this? Two, if this was to go forward, would a permit to operate be given prior to all the conditions having met? If it's the landscaping, road, hours of operation, whatever that might be?
If they were allowed to go forward, they would need to meet all of the conditions.
Prior to giving them the permit to operate at full scale?
I kind of misunderstood your question. Are you referring to Caltrans requirements?
No, that was a separate, two separate ones. One, I want to know what Caltrans input was to this project. Two, if this was to go forward and we heard that Mr. Berg in the past maybe not have met all the requirements, if to go forward with this project, and I think it went to Planning Commission with some 38 conditions, would all this have to apply prior to county giving him a permit to operate?
On Caltrans, I'll start with Caltrans.
Let me ask separately. What is Caltrans' input from traffic point of view?
The Caltrans response is mostly based in the previous track map, the Morabito-Burke tract that was completed that evaluated a much larger project and identified a number of issues related to that. We carried across as many of those as we felt was applicable to this project, as well as the city of San Luis Obispo had some concerns and some cumulative impact concerns, which had been also carried across to this project to try and address the cumulative traffic impacts.
And those has been addressed. Okay, question two, if this project or any other project for a business, do we give them permit to operate before they have met all the conditions that we put forward?
They'll need to apply for a building permit, and as a part of that building permit, we would include all of the appropriate provisions, the landscaping requirements, and the making sure they comply with the berming as they've identified in this application. And that would be all a part, they're kind of mixed, so it would be required as a part of that permitting process that they complete whatever needs to be done prior to final inspection. And there's some other pieces that would be done post permit.
And do we have a process in place to follow up if something was not done or taken place to stop the operation or any kind of enforcement measures we can take?
There, in this, the previous conditions here, there was a monitoring provision, and there could be, I guess, a worst case. I don't know if it's ever happened. Revocation of the land use permit is an ultimate possibility, but there'd be a lot of steps between that before that would happen to try and get compliance if there are certain conditions outstanding.
Thank you, Ms. Florence. Do you want to address the issue of the?
Yes, thank you, Supervisor Shaji and Carol Florence again. What has been characterized as crushing is really stockpile management. We're not crushing material and taking it off-site to be used. We have a specific height limitation on the stockpiles, and in order, because we're talking about, if you can imagine, surely, for example, your patio being taken out, the pieces are rather large, and it's hard to manage them to keep them at a specific elevation. So once they're piled up to try to alleviate some of these rather large angular pieces, they'll pinch them to make them lie flat, and that's the extent. So we are not recycling that material. It's really stockpile management, and I wanted to be very clear about that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Bernard.
Okay. This is a tough one. I have a couple of things, though, to sort out first. The original application was for, as Mr. Ogden mentioned, for a, it says here, for future on-site storage for future use as base in our storage area. But what the Planning Commission did after that was take it and make it a carte blanche one. They said that this is now nowhere does the Planning Commission resolution grant only for what is on site. So sometimes these things happen, and what was originally applied for actually got extended into on-site. It says this corporation shall be allowed to establish an outdoor storage yard on approximately 3-acre portion of an 18-acre site. So the Planning Commission extended that. So the idea that it's not exactly what it was is because of the former Planning Commission. Now, One of the reasons I asked about the age of the different house, of the houses and the operation, to see if maybe one was already established in 97, and then the houses got built too close to something and then created this conflict, and that's not the case. The houses were there well ahead of this. So any operation coming into this area would have been aware that the houses are going to be a factor. Now, the next thing that occurs to me is the expectation of what CS zoning was. In other words, ordinarily, and this is really hard because I have been so supportive of every recycling project coming, and in listening to this, it's been very difficult to sort through what were the criterias. In the CS zoning, could you please give us what are the general allowable uses in CS, as opposed to, say, manufacturing and industrial? When people first heard that this land was going to be rezoned CS, what were their general expectations of what kind of uses they were going to see?
Ellen, did you have someone?
I did. Maybe while John is looking that up, I can just in general tell you that our commercial service category is a pretty varied category. And there's probably several pages of uses, ranging from offices to let me back up a little bit and tell you that most of those uses are discretionary, so that a permit, not just a building permit, but some sort of a land use permit is required, so that we can, through that permit, make the determination whether that particular use is an appropriate use for that particular piece of property. So there are some heavier commercial service uses that might also be called kind of light industrial, which is something like what's being proposed. And then there are other uses that are office uses, which are, less impacting. So it's a very broad category.
But when you're sitting and planning and looking and figuring out which zone to identify this area, you have some zones that are manufacturing, some zones that are industrial, correct?
Well, we have industrial and we have commercial service, and they overlap. There are some uses that are what you might term more heavier commercial uses that are similar to this application, that in other that you may think of as more kind of manufacturing or industrial uses.
People's expectation, though, when you zone something CS as opposed to zoning it industrial, mm-hmm. is on the lighter end of what's
right.
going to be happening.
Right. If you're talking about,
right. putting something out in a notice to people about what will happening on their adjacent parcels.
Right. So industrial is sort of over on this end of the heavier, more impacting uses, whereas commercial services is maybe sort of in the middle. And but I want to stress it's a very broad use. And then there's retail over maybe on this other less impacting edge.
All right. This is probably the part that's going to be key for me. I don't believe the truck traffic was key. I mean, if you put UPS or FedEx out there, you're going to have even more trucks every day. And any other business that would go out there would possibly have much more in the volume of trucks. And certainly the build-out of that is going to be quite a bit. But I think the expectation of what and the timing of who, when, and when is probably going to be the key that tilts the balance for me. I think that the expectation for commercial service is on the more airport area type stuff we've been seeing out there. And, in fact, the plan that's coming up does reflect that. A lot of really beautiful buildings, great use of land adjacent to an airport where we can't put residential uses. So I'd be interested in hearing more of what the other board members have to say. But this is really hard because, what? Recycling really badly, but I'm not so sure this is the right place.
There is no other lights going, so I'm looking for a motion. Now, let me ask a question of clarification. In going through this thing on pages basically 38 on, it shows a track map and the conditions for the track map that, as I understand, on 160-something area, that's the conditions of this particular project. So if we speak to that, we speak to those conditions. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
I would just add that if the board is interested in in approving this project, that you let us know that, and that we will go back, and based on the discussion at the hearing today, we will go back and retool the findings. We'll take the Planning Commission findings up, update the original findings that were recommended to the Planning Commission, update those, and bring those back to the board.
Do you have a question?
Let me just
put your light in there, then, because I got two others on there. Mr. Sajjan?
If we do absolutely nothing, we have an operation that exists. What can we do that it's a win-win that can improve the operation but also improve the neighborhood? Because I'm looking at the conditions set forth, and I heard Mr. Ryan put in the road condition.
And the sunset.
And the sunset, and I'm hoping that the road does include a sidewalk, which is much safer for the children to walk. If you were to do something with the hours where the operation does not start till the school buses have left the area and does not go on after, let's say, 5 o'clock, absolutely no weekends, no lights, what can we do that the existing business can produce more by giving the neighbors more?
So you're
such thing. There's a balance.
I think what I hear you saying is that we would take the conditions and add some additional conditions to tighten down the uses even more. And so
if this,
road improvements, sidewalks.
If this business was not there, then I would say that let's not go there. Since at some level it does exist and it's going to stay there. What can we do that, since it's in front of us, we can have something in place that's an improvement for the neighborhood and the business, understanding that the neighbors are also in a commercial zone. It's not in a residential. I believe it's in ag zone. That's why the 500 feet, because I was looking into that.
We could add some additional conditions similar to the ones you just mentioned. And you're asking me, are there more things that we can add? Is that right?
Is there anything that we missed that could have appealed to the neighbors that say, under those circumstances, we think we can go there? Let me just add this to the noise factor. 2 years ago when I took a tour of the area for other reasons as well, those helicopters come by at any time, and there are no noise ordinance when this little boogers come around. They're noisier than the airplanes, and you can't carry a conversation or hear anything else, and they're still in operation. Do they have a permit? Where do we go?
That's
strictly FAA.
Right.
I'll say.
And I, like I mentioned earlier when we were discussing just noise issues in general, there's different kinds of noise. This is more of a steady stream noise versus an airplane overhead or helicopter overhead. To answer your other question about are there more things that we could do to tighten down this project, there probably are a few more things. The paving of the road is one. The sidewalks is another. The hours of operation is another. Those are the ones that we've concentrated on, as well as all the other 30-something conditions that are in the staff report. We could go back and look to see where we could tighten those up. One place that I'm thinking of additionally is that we could require a monitor to be hired by the county, paid for by the applicant, to monitor, really heavily monitor the operation. That's a pretty significant expense to the applicant, but it would give us information about whether they're complying daily, weekly, monthly, hourly with the conditions of approval.
I didn't think that APCD would have been supportive if the monitoring of the noise and the dust they weren't satisfied with. But have we considered any landscaping maybe towards the nearest neighbor at the cost of the applicant?
We looked at landscaping.
The property of the neighbor.
On the property of the neighbor. We have not done that. That might be something you want to talk to the applicant about.
Let me go on, Mr. Ryan.
Yeah, I would like to make a motion, and that would be to partially uphold the appeal and to require that the roads leading to and from the property are paved, so any truck traffic coming in and out will be on paved roads, that the project be approved for 7 years with that land use application being terminated at 7 years and requiring a new application, and the 7 years would start when the conditions are met or when they actually open for business. And the crushing time, and I haven't looked at the conditions, but the actual time of the crushing, be it that's 8 to 5, is that what?
I think right now it's 7 to 5. That's what is in the current condition.
And that's for just the crushing unit itself. I don't know if you want to expand it to include other, you know, related activities, tractors or pincher activities.
What I was looking at, if we did the crushing from 8 to 5, you have, because it is a construction yard, and you have trucks going off-site to do their business and stuff like that, and it is a commercial area where you have trucks coming and going all the time. But for the actual noise or impacts of the crushing operation itself, to start a little bit later. That way you would have, if your kids are off to school and you have any noises coming from that or any dust coming from that or not impacting that. But that would be the motion.
Does
so the
correct include
I'll second it for discussion.
Okay.
Does your road include the sidewalk?
Yeah. You can make a road standard.
Can
you can do an A1, whatever. I have Mr. Crawford wanted to.
Supervisor Ryan, I take it that your motion for the moment would be tentative, so staff could bring back this language for final action.
We need to look at. I recall next week's agenda has times on it. Sherry,
we would need to have this written and done basically the next tomorrow in order to make the next agenda. So. Give us a little bit more time.
Can you do it today?
Can we do it today?
Yeah.
We could probably do it at lunchtime.
Yeah, and then you could bring it back at the end of the day.
I was sort of being kidding that we could.
I wasn't.
I think the.
If you'd like us to do it at lunchtime, we will do it at lunchtime and bring it back today. I'm a little bit concerned about having enough time to actually craft these conditions so that they're enforceable
like,
and well written.
If the maker of the motion, the second would agree, did we go ahead and schedule it for next week? And that way it'll give Apple opportunity to get some information out for both. We, the board, and the applicants and appellants to look at.
One question on the crushing operation. The time that you want to limit it to was 8 to 5. Is that what you had said? 8 to 5?
For the crushing
operation. For just the crushing operation.
Yeah.
Okay. So under discussion of the motion, Ms. Bianchi?
I seconded it for discussion.
Yeah. Under discussion,
okay.
Ms. Bianchi.
I'd like to add a condition that the applicant be required to reimburse the planning department on real-time billing for any enforcement investigations or actions.
Make it a motion.
Would you agree to that?
Mm.
Considering, I think they have to
considering
anyway.
The track record?
I would only agree to it if that applicant was found in violation.
Yeah. I think
it could be complained against constantly, and you'd have everyone out there investigating it when he's actually meeting all his conditions. I don't want to pay him for that, but if you go out and investigate it and he's found in violation, then he's
also charging for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can put that in the. Then you
that work?
Did agree?
That way, if he's in violation, you know, he pay for it. But if people are just complaining when he's actually doing everything.
So we have that as part of the motion.
Would there be any considerations, landscaping, if the neighbors so choose within some guidelines?
I think the difficulty you have in that is doing things off-site where you don't have adequacy and the ability to control.
I know, but a certain amount of money for certain landscaping can be given to a neighbor then to who then will choose to do what they
I would want to ask council if we have the authority to require landscaping like that off-site.
Or could be voluntarily.
While they're discussing it, Ms. Bernard, you have.
Yeah, you have in your list of conditions 10-foot sidewalks. I don't see the need for that. Can we go back to a standard commercial sidewalk? I mean, that's kind of, I don't know if we're 10 feet, but we don't even get that where there's a lot of foot traffic. So
yeah.
I would say standard sidewalk width.
I can guarantee you 10-foot sidewalk is part of commercial service because I had to do it in front of my restaurant 10 years ago. So.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you on that. I just want to bring it back to something that's at least a reasonable.
We'd have to do the road standard that would be applicable to commercial service.
Your restaurant was right in the middle of the downtown area.
San Miguel, sorry.
So we don't want to give you any break.
No. I think we need to. We kind of need to better understand the nexus between the condition that we landscape the neighbor's property and this.
I think it's getting too complicated. I was putting it as an offer, usually something we did in Black Lake where the applicant voluntarily did what the neighbor she done. It was and it worked well. It blocked all the, it was a traffic light.
Well, I think if you had everyone's consent to do that, there wouldn't be an issue there. But we need to know a little bit more about.
I'd rather not condition it, but as a goodwill gesture, as a good neighbor policy, I don't know if Ms. Florence want to.
Okay, so what we have is a motion to uphold the appeal and bring this back.
Partially.
Partially uphold this and bring it back on the 20th. It's going to be pretty close. The road will be paved and the standard should be set for appropriate for commercial service.
We will check with county engineering on that.
That there be a condition of a 7-year sunset. The hours of operation for the crushing operational only is 8 to 5, and that any violation, code violation that they are found, I'm not saying this right. You have to get the language down on that they would be responsible for real time billing.
We have that.
They are found at fault, and I think that's a standard issue with code violations anyway. But that's all right.
Were you going to take out the 10-foot sidewalks?
That's in the standard for the.
So that's not in the motion.
We don't have 10-foot sidewalks. We have
Standard. We will check with county engineering.
Engineering has
and
standard.
We'll check on that and use the standard road improvement.
They're all
standard.
And I don't recall what it was, but there's probably something listed in the track map that sets the standard for the road too. Okay. I'm going to hold this off, Carol, until we get the thing back, and then we'll have comment on it.
Okay.
Do you have something you want to
just okay, a ahead. Clarification. I'm sorry, Carol Florence again. I wish the timing were such that we were able to obtain our permits for the roadway improvements and utilities for the whole subdivision that would coincide with the operation of this. So if we... if you could authorize staff and the applicant to work with Public Works, because there may be an interim road that we could chip seal and make a separate pedestrian path until we actually install the true improvements for the track, because currently the road is not in the same location that it will be ultimately when the tract improvements are completed. So we're talking about potentially spring to complete those, but there may be an interim period.
I could go along with that because I could see that happening. But the main thing that happens is any trucks that are coming in and out of that yard will be on a paved road.
So we'll
and if it's an interim.
The condition is left to staff to work with engineering to come up with a condition on it. And if need be, they can get in touch with
that,
you.
That really complies with your intent.
We have everything else.
Yes.
In place.
Thank you.
Okay.
We can do that with an alternative interim improvement.
If there's an interim road that's going to be used that's not part of the track, then yes.
Okay.
Then I think that's what we're saying is we don't want it to be a dirt road. All right. Roll call.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Pinard?
No.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye. Okay, with that then, we will now take a 15-minute break. We will be back at 5 after the hour, and we will take up the last item of the morning.
Genetically engineered organisms in San Luis Obispo County.
Thank you. Staff then, Pam.
Good morning. Janet Haley with the County Clerk Recorder's Office, and I'm going to give you the staff report on item D1. The initiative petition to establish a county ordinance prohibiting the growing of genetically engineered organisms in San Luis Obispo County was filed in the Clerk Recorder's Office on June 28th and consisted of 12,104 signatures. A random sample signature check of 500 signatures was completed, and the percentage of valid signatures was 81.8%. When this percentage was applied to the 12,104 signatures filed, the total was more than the number required to certify the petition based on the random sampling verification. The certificate of sufficiency is being presented to your board today, and pursuant to the elections code, your board has three options. Adopt the ordinance without alteration at this meeting or within 10 days from today. Submit the ordinance without alteration to the voters at the next statewide election, occurring not less than 88 days after the date of the order of election. The next statewide election for us is the November 2nd, 2004 general election. Or refer the measure to any county agency for a report on the fiscal impact or any other matters that your board requests to be in the report. If your board requests a report, it shall be presented within the time prescribed by your board, but not later than 30 days from today. Upon presentation of that report, your board's options will be to adopt the ordinance within 10 days or order an election to be held at the next statewide election, occurring not less than 88 days after the date of the order of election. The last day an election may be called to be consolidated with the November 2nd election is August 6th. The next statewide election after the November 2nd election is the primary election in March of 2006. If your board does take action today to place the measure on the November 2nd ballot, primary arguments for and against the measure will be due on July 28th. If your board takes action at a later date to place the measure on the November 2nd ballot, primary arguments will be due approximately 10 days after your board's action on a date to be announced at that time. This concludes the staff report, and I'll be happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions? Okay, then what we'll do is go to the public, and I'm going to ask one thing. We're not here today to discuss the merits or demerits of genetic engineering. We're only here to discuss putting it on the ballot or not. As our third option is to get in a report. Ms. Pinard?
Yes, I would just like to hear from the clerk's office regarding these are all election deadlines and times, and is there someone here from the clerk's office who can tell us what effect this has on them? And what
the is? That is,
hello. Right. I'm from the clerk's office.
Okay.
And what deadlines?
The effect of the deadlines and what your recommendation through experience, because we're getting very close on deadlines here, and I know Julie usually comes and tells us what is her preference. So if you could relay, how does this affect your operations?
I think you just did that. You just gave us the deadlines that we can operate with.
The deadlines, right, and what our preference would be is if you are planning on placing it on the ballot, that you go ahead and do it today so that we can proceed in calling for arguments. Because our goal is to get the sample ballots out to the voters at the earliest possible date that's allowed by law. And that's how we set our dates for primary arguments to be due. If you don't call it and put it on the ballot today and you do it at a later time, but still within the 88 days before the November election, that means we'll just have to push out our deadlines for calling for arguments. So our preference would be, if you are planning on placing it on the November 2nd ballot, to go ahead and do that today.
Thanks.
Okay. Again, We're going to discuss the merits and demerits of putting the initiative on the ballot, and not the merits and demerits of the issue at hand. So with that, again, I remind you, I need a request to speak form, and I have a lot of 3-minute time period for everyone, but you do not need to use all of it. So the first one is Noah Schumlicher, followed by Laura Lopez.
Hello, members of the board. My name is Noah Schumlicher. I live in North Morro Bay, 2970 Elm Avenue. I've lived in the county for 8 years, and I'm here today as one of the signature collectors for the Slow GE Free initiative. I was out throughout most of the farmers markets in the county, and I talked to a lot of different people during that time. And what I saw was a very broad range of support for this initiative. Many people who are not petition signers would actually turn around as they're walking by saying they don't sign petitions once I mentioned that it was to keep genetically engineered crops out of the county. I noticed that almost every family with children would sign. And a lot of people that were visiting here from out of the county were actually willing to sign, but I would have to tell them no. So one of the things that got me involved with this was I saw a presentation by a Canadian farmer named Percy Smizer. He was a conventional canola farmer, and it was very powerful. I think it's something that we have such incredible diversity here. We need to put this on the ballot because we've collected over 12,000 signatures. So it's obviously supported. Many people sign because they believe that it deserves to be put through the democratic process. And I would support and urge you to go along with what staff has recommended by putting it on the ballot today. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura Lopez, followed by Mike Selena.
Hi, good morning. I am Laura Lopez, and I am here representing Slow GE Free and these people who helped collect signatures today and the 12,000-plus voters that signed our petition before the board. We would like the board to vote to put our initiative on the ballot today. To begin our campaign, we need a measure number. We need to start organizing and fundraising and arrange speakers for the forum. Waiting 3 weeks for the August 3rd board meeting will be putting everyone on a time crunch, including our county elective officials. For example, several speakers would not commit unless we are officially on the ballot, and schedules are beginning to become full, you know, summer and fall. Your decision today is not about whether GE Free is good for the county. It is plain and simple a matter of democratic process. Our work for this petition is proof that the voters of SLO want to choose whether we grow genetically engineered crops or not. And by waiting for the reports, that will not affect the ultimate vote. The process is stalled unnecessarily for county elections and officials and both sides of the argument in the upcoming campaign. So I please urge you to consider putting the initiative on the ballot today. Thank you.
Mike Zelina, followed by Pam Hetherington.
Hello, Mike Zelina. I'm from Cambria. I also would like, on the behalf of SLO GE Free, to ask you to adopt this initiative today or to put it on the ballot today to make that decision. An all-volunteer group of concerned citizens have gathered the over 12,000 signatures. And we the people, that sounds kind of corny, but we've asked the right to decide this important matter. And by placing it on the ballot today, you will allow us to officially start our campaign. And it will give the county clerk, as they mentioned, enough time for the all-important tasks of requesting and receiving ballot arguments and also ensuring that the ballots are ready for printing on schedule so that absentee ballot people and the actual voter information packets go out on time. There's no reason to wait for reports to come back to make this decision. The board can put this on the ballot today and also order additional reports. The only reason to wait for reports is if the board was considering adopting the ordinance, and from our discussions with you, that is not likely to happen. The board is free to take the upcoming months to learn more about GE and to order reports and to inform the public, but that process is now independent of what the people have asked for. By waiting the additional 3 weeks, the board delays the inevitable and risks jeopardizing the on-time delivery of the ballots, as I mentioned. So we're asking you to please do the right thing and vote to place this on the ballot today. Thanks.
Thank you. Pamela Hetherington, followed by Teresa Campbell.
Good morning. I am Pamela Hetherington. Before Ventria tried to plant pharmaceutical rice here, we thought we were safe from genetically engineered crops in Slo County. The speed with which Ventria tried to force the decision on us and the fact that we only found out about it because rice is heavily regulated made many people realize that a speedy response was necessary to save Slo County from the fate of Midwestern states experiencing the economic and legal problems associated with genetically engineered crops. Within weeks, Slo GE Free submitted an initiative, organized hundreds of volunteers, and began the democratic process of gathering signatures from voters who want to be able to decide whether or not these crops should be grown in our county. After 6 weeks, we had accomplished the unprecedented task of gathering over 12,000 signatures. The whole process has moved at an accelerated rate in order to ensure that we could meet the deadline set by the county clerk recorder to make the November 2004 ballot. Whether you agree or disagree with the issue, this has been an amazing demonstration of democracy in action. Volunteers are thrilled with this accomplishment and ready to begin the campaign process. In order to continue this pace and avoid delay, we are asking you to vote to put this initiative on the ballot today. This action would respect the voice of over 12,100 voters who signed this petition and the spirit of the democratic process. By waiting for reports, if that is your choice, It will not affect the ultimate vote. The process is stalled unnecessarily for the county election officials and both sides of the argument in the upcoming election. So we urge you, please, to vote to put the initiative on the ballot today. Thank you.
Thank you. Teresa Campbell, followed by David Weissman.
Hello, I'm Teresa Campbell from Cambria. And
you need to pull that mic up.
Sorry. I'm Teresa Campbell from Cambria, and I have also been part of the signature gathering process and have talked to thousands of people about putting this ballot, this initiative on the ballot, and I can tell you that San Luis Obispo County voters are very independent thinkers who want to decide on issues for themselves. And there were people who were vehemently against genetically engineered crops and signed right away. There are people who were for genetic engineering and signed the petition because they feel like it should come out for public debate and learning. Other people didn't know that much and really look forward to the education process that will occur once this is on the ballot and forums and educational processes begin. Some people knew quite a bit and still hadn't decided and want to hear what was said. So, you know, we've got all kinds of different people who are undecided and are looking forward to this campaign process. So the point is the campaign process must begin. The county clerk recorder's office understands the importance of working in a timely manner, and they validated our signatures in 3 days, and we thank them very much for that. To delay putting the initiative on the ballot serves what purpose? San Luis Obispo citizens have completed the petition circulation of the initiative process and now need to get that campaign in gear. It is the democratic way. Please don't stand in the way of the important time needed to adequately conduct a successful campaign. In other words, a campaign that informs voters so they can make an educated decision. If you care about the voice of SLO voters, please put the initiative on the ballot today. And Dorel Rawlings personally gathered 1,400 signatures, and she's not here today. And this is a little sentence she wrote. Please inform the SLO Board of Supervisors that putting the GE Free initiative on the November ballot is very important to me and to the more than 1,000 other voters in the county who signed the petition for me. Simply but elegantly put, you represent the people. You have heard the voice of the people. Please do your job and let the democratic process begin today. Thank you.
Thank you. David Weissman, followed by Miranda Leonard.
Good morning. David Weissman from Morro Bay. And in agreeing with those who've spoken before about putting this initiative forward before the public today is important, I'd like to just reinforce the V word that we've heard a little bit today, volunteer. This is rather a groundbreaking and landmark achievement as a volunteer achievement. We all know since, I believe it was Governor Hiram Johnson under his administration back in around 1916, 1917, when the initiative process first came to California and was meant to represent truly the will of the people And we've seen how in decades and decades since then, that process has been corrupted to the point where when I was began this work as a volunteer signature gatherer in Los Angeles in the late 90s in Pasadena, Santa Monica, for the Oaks Project, the people who did Proposition 9, Prop 103, very famous propositions, people were fighting to pay $4 and $5 a name to get people to gather signatures for their issues, erupting in fights in front of supermarkets over that. And here we have people, not for $4 a name, not for $5 a name, numbers that are paid to gather signatures, but giving of their time, their free time, and their effort. That's a serious commitment. To give you an estimate, when I began working in Los Angeles in the 90s, in the city of Pasadena, larger, and in Los Angeles and Santa Monica, larger numbers far than here, groups of signature gatherers required 6 months to gather the number of names that these folks gathered in 6 weeks. And that's in Los Angeles, the largest and most metropolitan city in the state. So that represents a truly superhuman volunteer effort. When we testified in Sacramento before a state committee attempting to get a qualification placed on the ballot that would list volunteer initiatives, just so people would know, this isn't some paid initiative that people signed on to do for the money, but truly believe in, one of the assemblymen said, well, you know, volunteer initiatives will never work in this state. We have to have paid gatherers because who's going to want to give up their time to go do that? It's a rather cynical response. And we stood and rose in mass and said, we will. And I think this county should be proud of the fact that they had volunteers, again, volunteers willing to put out the effort required to gather a number of names that shocked when I told the people in Los Angeles how many names were gathered in just 6 weeks. One woman, she was drinking, you could hear iced tea, and she spit the ice cubes out. Because she said, you got 12,000 names in 6 weeks. That is the envy of the volunteer movement. So in respect to that, I would indeed encourage placing it on the ballot. Thank you.
Thank you. Miranda Leonard, followed by Daniela Aaron.
Good afternoon. My name is Miranda Leonard, and I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo. And I represent Slow GE Free, and we have worked very hard to gather 12,104 signatures. We have done this because we think that remaining GE Free is good for the health of San Luis Obispo citizens, from babies to seniors. It is also good for our wildlife, air, water, and soil. We feel it is also good for our economy because no one in the world wants to buy GE products if they know about it. I now want to say that continuing this democratic process without large breaks in time is also very good for our county. For that reason, I want to thank the County Clerk Recorder's Office for validating our signatures in only 3 days. They appreciated the importance of working in a timely way to ensure the democratic process, showing respect for the people who have worked so hard within the framework of the initiative process and for the people who have voiced their will on this issue is good for creating trust in our local leaders and in the American system of government. I ask the board to follow the lead of all the people who have dealt with this issue with this initiative thus far without judgment of the issues. Please place this initiative on the ballot today without delay. The people have spoken through their signatures and now deserve the time that it takes to study and learn about this important issue that will have impacts on our county and state forever. Thank you.
Thank you. Daniela Arnon, followed by Reverend C. Height.
Good morning. I'm Daniela Arnon, and I live in Los Osos. And I will ask that you please honor the vote of the will of the people, the 12,000 people that signed our petition, and honor the democratic process, and please vote to put this on the ballot today. Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend C. Height, followed by Shane Perry. Sean? I should go to the resident Irishman down here and ask.
I am Reverend C. Hyde, Artist Advocate, M.A. You have limited information. Let informed voters say no. Let them understand the reasons to say never. Let me just play devil's advocate with the subject of genetically altered rice, because rice is the crop of choice. Genetically altered rice was the crop chosen for this county because the county is isolated by mountains, and this is an incredible gamble with the future of rice production in California. You are also a county in crisis and known to accept risk industries like prisons, power plants, and mental institutions. Genetically altered crops are one more risk. I remind you, your number one economy is agriculture. As an artist, nothing would be more aesthetically pleasing or make me feel more at home than to see the sky reflected in flooded rice fields. I have lived among rice fields, which have been the most prominent image in my artwork. However, the Caring People chapter of KSE is going to object to the contamination of the California seed crop because California feeds the world and the world rejects contaminated food sources. It has been officially said the advocates have nothing to worry about. Rice needs flat land and hot weather. In the south of Taiwan, rice fields surrounded two sides of our estate, and yes, it was flat where it drained into the river. The fertilizer contaminated the river and my family's well water. As far as the eye could see, there were beautiful terraced fields, one draining into the next. We have seen pictures of Vietnam, haven't we? The Hayashi family fields in Arroyo Grande would be ideal, as the fields along Sienica and Valley Road. But flooded rice fields are inconsistent with county public health's alarm over the Nile virus, and Monsanto would profit from mosquito abatement. We would expect aggressive spraying programs with a single field. This would affect your farm workers. You have a public health care, human services, and housing crisis with a large underserved population living outdoors. Public health will not convince me they are capable of reporting and treating any condition which has a county liability. Let's talk about byproducts and pestilence. My large raku work has rice hulls in the clay body, and as did the ton of sculpture clay I mixed for my art installations. Rice hulls will be plentiful, must be sprayed to reduce pestilence, and are a hazardous byproduct, which contributes to respiratory disease. Will we see the eventual building of silos and rice mills if the crop is successful, or are we just grounds for the experiment? I have recovered a photograph by Thomas Singh of an art installation in a Sacramento Valley rice field, which belonged to the Singh family. This is what I learned about my site. The plant stubble attracts rodents, which will attract birds of prey, who will spread the seed all over the county. Genetically altered rice may replace native plants along creeks and marshes. The field stubble will eventually have to be burned to control the vermin. Because of the composition, the smoke is acrid and thick. The bluffs and small mountains will hold in the pollution.
Again, to remind people, we're here to discuss putting it on the ballot, not the merits or demerits of it.
I'd ask you to consider the risks in your decision.
Thank you, Ms. Height. Mr. Perry, I'm going to let you settle our argument we have, whether it's Sean or Sane or... Come on, you're up.
Thank you, Mr.
President. And then followed by Otto Schmidt. Huh?
He doesn't want to speak.
Let me ask you a question. How do you pronounce your first name?
Sean.
Thank you. We just want to solve our problem up here. Otto Schmidt followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning. I am Otto Schmidt of the Santa Margarita area. I appeal to you to respect, defend, and uphold the wishes and right of more than 1 in 12 of the 144,593 registered voters in San Luis Obispo County, more than 12,000 of your constituents. Allow them a most basic democratic right to vote on this proposition on this November's ballot. I ask you to resolve and honor these wishes in a just and timely manner and let the people speak in November. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Greening.
I'm Eric Greening, and I agree with all of the speakers who have encouraged you to put this issue on the ballot today so that it can be decided on November 2nd, and so that the county clerk's office has a reasonable time frame for responding to it. In addition to the many good reasons they've brought up, I will bring up one more. Every election, you are always heard, and rightly so, encouraging the public to participate, to have full and enthusiastic turnout, and to use this precious democratic process. It wasn't long ago that down across the street in the library, we had a very inspiring presentation from a young man who had been in South Africa, where for four-fifths of the people, democracy as we experience it is brand new, where people stood in line sometimes for days for the precious opportunity of casting a ballot, many of them for the first time in our lives, their lives. We have that ability here, and it often, way too often, goes unused. When we see people using the democratic process in the enthusiastic way that we have seen in terms of the volunteer gathering and the enthusiastic signing of these petitions to get it on the ballot as soon as possible, certainly the best thing your board can do to encourage that enthusiasm to spill over into full participation in the November election is to indeed move with the greatest speed to get it on the ballot. If even the public appearance of thwarting such a movement were to go out, it would probably thwart your own efforts to develop that enthusiasm and that turnout. So I know you're going to do the right thing. You're going to honor the democratic process, and you're going to put this on the ballot at the first available time, which is today, so that the process can unfold. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone here who has not spoken or wish to speak on this? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment, and we'll bring it back. Ms. Bianchi?
Yeah, I have two questions and then a comment. The first question is for Janet. Do I understand that you said that if we postponed putting this on the ballot until August 3rd, that it would make a significant time crunch for your office?
We normally give 14 to 15 days for arguments once we publish the notice. We would have to cut that back so that we would say publish the notice on the 6th and ask for arguments due on the 11th, which would give people less time to prepare an argument and submit it to our office. We would still make our deadlines, but it would
be
cut out time.
A significant time crunch for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry.
I had two questions.
Okay.
The second one is for Bob Lilly. Bob, we asked you to put together a committee, which we know you did. And one of my problems about voting to put this on the ballot today was I thought it would be, you know, rather rude to your committee to make a decision before the committee, you know, completed its work. My question is, I would hope that the committee wouldn't feel insulted or bypassed if we put it on the ballot today. So my question is, do you think they would feel that way?
I'm sure the committee would like to, you know, have the full discretion with your board to make the choice on the ballot separate from the presentation that will be made. And I doubt very seriously that anyone on the committee would be insulted with whatever decision you made.
Okay. Thank you very much. When we ask people to, you know, give of their time and their talents to be on a committee, you kind of hate to insult them by sort of, you know, bypassing them. So that was my concern. I have no problem with putting this on the ballot today if you don't have any more lights.
I have more lights.
Oh, okay.
Ms. Bernard?
Yes, I see what we've done is two different things. One is the board asked for information via this committee, and that is for the board's own understanding and where it was heading. But we have now a separate process underway here, and this is the ability to put something on the ballot that the people have asked to be put on. So I would like to make the motion to submit the ordinance to the voters at the next election.
Before you do that, I want to make one comment. The time frame that we looked at, there was a request to do an emergency ordinance, and this board unanimously at that time chose not to do the emergency ballot, but to go forward and get a committee and get the understanding of what we're talking about in terms of this, so that we can look at whether or not to put an ordinance. The volunteers have all the rights in the world. They did that. They did not wait to get back the information that we were asking for. And we also have the legal right to ask for that committee to give that report before we have make our final decision on the ballot. These are all legal, democratic ways of doing things. So before anybody starts hissing or saying anything, I think that side of the story has to be said, that this board, under the thoughts that an ordinance would be looked at, had asked the committee to make that recommendation. And yes, in my personal opinion, and some of the people that are on that, they're going to think that their job is being usurped. So, Ms. Bianchi.
No, I was not happy with the initiative going forward, but it did. And 12,000 people signed it. And this doesn't say whether I'm pro or anti-GE, whatever. And however, if the committee is not going to be insulted and the committee's report will be made public, it'll be all public information, and it will be in time for the November ballot.
Is that a second then to my motion?
It's a second to the motion, but
motion,
I wanted to make the motion. I thought that
well,
was
I got a motion by Pernard, seconded by Ms. Bianchi. Any other discussion on the motion? Roll call.
Mrs. Pernard?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
No.
Mr. Ovitt?
No. That and the issue will be placed on the ballot. And that concludes this morning's agenda. We will now go into closed session. I'd like to think we're doing a popularity contest, but that does not necessarily signify that. With that, is there anyone in the audience? I still have business to conduct. Is there anyone in the audience wish to make public comment on the closed session items? Seeing none, we'll stand adjourned to closed session and return at 2 o'clock.
Session, so I have nothing to report.
Thank you. With that, we'll go to item C5, our first hearing today.
Item C5 is a hearing to consider proposed amendments to the Growth Management Ordinance, Title 26, LRP 2003-009, request by the county to maintain the countywide growth rate at 2.3%, the Napomo Mesa area rate at 2.3%, and the Cambria growth rate at 1%, allow 10 to 15% of the total annual allotments for any one developer in the Napomo Mesa area, and carry over 97 unused allotments from the previous year's annual allotment all districts. This recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Great. Kimmy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Kim Murray.
Kim. I get the wrong.
With planning
you
and building
You sit behind
staff.
Me drawn. Problems.
Your board took action on June 22nd to continue the growth rate at 2.3% for the county and 2.3% for the Napomo Mesa area and 1% for the Cambria area. Specific action was required for both the Napomo Mesa and Cambria areas because Title 26 had provisions for these two areas that expired as of July 1st of this year. So the urgency ordinance that your board adopted on June 22nd is covering the time period between when they expired on July 1st and when this current ordinance becomes effective. Your board also voted to allow a 10% carryover of the previous year's unused allotments. The resolution included in your packet enables the carryover of 97 allotments from the previous year. And finally, your board acted to increase the percentage of allotments allowed to be obtained by any single applicant in the Napomo Mesa area from 5% to 10%. Your action included allowing up to 15% for any single applicant whose project included at least 35% of the units as affordable units. So the ordinance included in your packet reflects the actions that your board approved on June 22nd and is here for final adoption this afternoon. And I'm available for any questions.
Good. Any questions? Mr. Sajjan, any? I don't see a large audience out there. So.
Yeah, I everything we talked about, I heard it here today, so
okay.
It's as clear as...
I either overread it or something, but the 97 is... carry over for the...
That's for the county.
That's for the county.
That's for the county.
Because Nipomo has like 40 or less now.
14, I believe.
That's fine. Okay. It sounds about right because it's about 900 to 1,000. Thank you. Yankee?
Yes. Kim and I have been having an exchange of emails. because the Cambria Community Services District has had more grandfathered meters. It's just unreal. And finally, when I looked at the staff report on page C57, top of the page, it discusses that the 1% growth rate would be for over a three-year period would be a 39 new meters, meters, whatever you want to call them, and then plus 8 grandfathered. So I figured that out, and that doesn't make a 1% growth rate. It makes a 1.21% growth rate. So I wanted a definition of grandfathered. And bless Kim, tracked it down, and she came up with this, the district's convoluted method for determining what a grandfathered meter is. I believe that this county ought to determine what we consider a grandfathered meter to be and adhere to that. And so after this is, you know, after the public comment, et cetera, I'm going to bring this back, okay? Because it's you know, part of their definition, this is what set me off yesterday, part of their definition of the district's definition. You can't turn a page when you're in a hurry. Part of their definition was the district has determined, this category consists of parcels with what the district has determined have pre-existing grandfathered commitments for service. You know, and my question, which started this whole bunch of emails, was pre-existing to what? You know, the day before yesterday, because that's what it appears to have been over time. So I'm going to bring that back. Yeah, but well, in the past, they've been there for 25 years.
When we first did this growth management 15 years ago, there was a said number of units
that
Cambria had that were grandfathered, and they were allotted so much per year, so many per year. Now, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I'm thinking it was in the 40s or 50s, something like that. That this is almost getting to the last of the grandfathered units, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, if I may...
Unless they're adding more to the list. And I'm
they're
not,
adding more to the list.
Then I can't...
Spot.
Yeah.
Well, they got older now, okay?
Yeah.
These are the only...
They
new,
were grandkids then, right?
No, these are the only newly created grandparents I've ever come across.
Are we interfering with local decision makers?
No, there was a recognition because of this confusion of their list, right. Our list.
Well, actually, the difference in grandfathered versus replacement meters, and I had emailed Shirley this, is partially our fault because if a house is demolished and is not replaced within a year, our ordinance, our land use ordinance, says it's not a replacement house anymore. It's a new house. In order to accommodate that house not having to go to the back of the line of being treated as a new allotment when they've been paying to maintain the meter even though the house isn't there any longer, the CCSD has been considering them grandfathered. And you're right, the ordinance does make a provision for a certain number of grandfathered units every year.
But it varies from year to year.
It does vary.
And so anyway, we'll talk about it afterwards.
Okay.
But I just wanted to bring that up and also, in case anyone from the services district is listening, just bring it up for a future agenda item to discuss so they won't panic and think we're going to make a decision today.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, with that, no other questions. We'll go to the public. Again, the yellow slips are requested in a three-minute allocation of time, and we'll start off with Eric Greening, followed by Jerry Bunin.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, once again protesting the separation of your actions on growth rates from the resource management level of severity findings that have always immediately preceded and underlain your growth rate actions. I particularly protest your not having before you the Water Resources Advisory Committee's recommendation that the Nipomo area's water supply level of severity be moved from 2 to 3. We have been told that this and other levels of severity will be considered in coming months. My question then is, supposing that you decide to adopt a level of severity 3 for Nipomo water supply in 4 or 5 months from now, can you then lower the growth rate in immediate response? And if you do, is there any policy in place that would have metered this year's allocations so that no more than a proportionate share would have been given out if your board makes a course correction within a few months? What is the largest number of Nipomo allocations that could be issued by, say, December 1st? A level of 3 severity, moving from a level of 2 to a level of 3 severity, means that the crisis is no longer just anticipated. It is upon us. Please don't ignore this warning from the Water Resources Advisory Committee, which has always in the past appreciated the seriousness with which you have regarded our advice. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerry Bunin, followed by Dave Watson.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director from the Home Builders Association. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. It's always a pleasure to see you, and I think I like going after Eric instead of having him follow me and offer a different point of view. On a quick note, I'd like to, I know this is not general comment, but it would really be nice to get the staff reports online when you go to the website, if you put that in your thought process for down the road. We support the staff recommendation to double the number of units that an individual builder can get in Nipomo. But we also strongly urge the board to take a whole relook at the growth management system. We don't think it's working very well. You got a system, a housing system, where 25% of all the permits weren't used this year. And you have home prices going through the roof. I'm not sure we know what the total answer is, but we don't think growth management is working the way anyone wants to anyone's benefit. But if you're going to keep it for the time being, we recommend that for Nipomo down the road, not today, that you look at a system in which you set aside a percentage of homes for families building their own homes, or a percentage of permits for families building their own homes, or for people building one or two units at a time, and then you leave the rest for production builders to do on a first-come, first-served basis. You won't wind up with any more units, but you'll probably wind up with more moderately priced housing than we currently are getting. The way the current system works, which we're hoping you're going to change, is you really can't do a mixed-use project of 20 condominiums in any kind of an economical fashion. You're going to put 12 or 20 condominiums on top of commercial property, commercial usage. You can't do that in halves or thirds. You have to wait until you have enough permits to do the whole process. That adds unnecessarily to the cost of housing. If you're doing a 20-unit subdivision, you have to put in all of your public improvements right off the bat to start working. And then you can't finish that project for 3 years. That also adds unnecessarily to the cost of housing. So we think that doubling the number of units is a step in the right direction, but we really think that this system isn't working very well and that it would be a good topic for everyone to revisit. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dave Watson, followed by Linda Hall.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, good afternoon. Dave Watson here on behalf of King Ventures here in San Luis. We're here in support of the staff's recommendations as brought forward to you today. While I concur with many of the comments that were made by Mr. Bunin, I think this is an important first step in the direction of beginning to allow mixed-use and multifamily projects to proceed in a logical fashion without overtaxing the resources of Nipomo. And in addition to water, as you know, there are many other issues, traffic and otherwise, that have to be addressed. So we're here today in support of the suggestions, and we appreciate the board's consideration of those new amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Linda Hall.
Linda Hall, and I am surprised that the board isn't more conversant on Cambria water rights, because they're probably some of the most interesting money games that you could ever imagine. And especially in District 2, Supervisor Bianchi, you must be aware of the relatively new designation called active service meters. I don't see a response, but you're not. Anyway, they were created as a subsection of grandfathered meters, and those are they were broken out of the grandfathered meter category and given their own designation for a very specific reason. And it happened, you could check it, it's Ordinance 2-2000, happened in November of the year 2000. This has been around a while, 3.5 years or more here. And it created money to do a lot of things that people wanted to do in various organizations. Pardon me?
Is it like keeping the district from going bankrupt?
No, this was something that actually created money for organizations and actually individuals. The district really didn't benefit in their own coffers from Ordinance 2-2000. But anyway, it's most interesting. It's far more than I could even begin to address in 3 minutes. But I think it will probably come out at some point in time as interesting reading for people that are curious about how to make money. Bye.
Thank you. Is there anyone else to speak on this issue? With that, then, we'll bring it back to the board. If there's no conversation, I'll entertain a motion. Yeah. Ms. Bianchi.
Yeah, Wanda, I just wanted to make a comment. Because we live too far out to get cable, we have a satellite dish. And because my husband was born and raised in Los Angeles, we have signed up for some peculiar reason for KTLA television out of Los Angeles. They had a segment on last month on the highest priced homes in the nation are in Southern California, where they have absolutely no growth controls. So I just thought I'd throw that in. It's not necessarily our growth management system. It's California, period.
Mr. Sajjan? Did you have something else?
If he has a comment, that's fine. I don't care who makes the motion.
Go ahead. It covers a lot of Nipoma and Cambria, and I made the motion last time. I'll second
Moved
your motion. Moved
by Bianchi, seconded by Mr. Sajjan. A way of reading.
We just knew it.
Well, I think it's staff's recommendation.
Adopt staff's recommendation.
Staff's recommended actions number 1 and 2.
Waive reading.
Yes.
Oh. You want her to read the whole thing?
No.
I was just waiting for
Jim,
the reaction there.
I mean.
Okay.
Call for the question.
That's what I think I'll do. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
And then before we leave this subject, I would like to have placed on a future agenda a discussion of grandfathered meters relative to Cambria and whether we can apply our own definition, whether we have to follow the districts, what our options are. That should be enough.
I was just wondering if we have authority or are we interrupting with their local.
Mr. McNulty is grabbing his mic.
I think what needs to be done, though, is what Ms. Bianchi is bringing up is that this was 15 years ago. We had grandfathered units that we recognized because of this dual list issue. And there's now some definitions that were not applied back then that are probably applied now. And we need to get an understanding because I think our ultimate goal is to try to get to one list. Get out of this issue that we have, because it's come up every year we do this growth management. And it has not got resolved. So is that what you're going to say, Tim?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out that the issue of the grandfathered units in Cambria has been in your growth management ordinance from the very beginning. It's separate and distinct from the issue of the list. And the way it's currently drafted, the way it was drafted when you enacted it, is that it defines grandfathered units as those that have been certified by the Cambria Community Services District as being grandfathered units. So if you wanted to move to some other definition of grandfathered units, you could do that. You would need to amend this provision in your growth management ordinance.
Yeah, well, my point is that as I read in their definition, it's pre-existing, that the district has determined to be pre-existing. But pre-existing to when? I mean, yesterday or 15 years ago? Or, you know, we just kind of need to tie this down, I think, for our sake as well as anybody else's.
Okay. I just get it locked in again is the biggest thing we're going to do. Thank you. Thank you, Kim. And now we will have item C6.
Item C6 is a hearing to consider an ordinance amending Title 22 Land Use Ordinance 1 G020012, a request by Steve and Renee Trosh, and 2 G02008M, a request by Robert Anderson, 4th District. Recommendation is for tentative approval.
All righty.
Trosh, I'm sorry.
With that, we'll go to, is it Cammie?
Yeah, I'll start it out. Although you can call me Kim because we get confused all the time with one another.
If you write your name on both sides of the tag,
then you know who you are.
My name is Cammie Griffin, and I am with the County of San Luis Obispo Planning and Building Department. You are here today to consider the summer 2004 general plan amendment cycle. There are three items on the cycle today. Your first step is to consider the Planning Commission's actions, hold a public hearing, take tentative action on each item, with final action occurring through the adoption of the resolution and ordinances at the end of the public hearings today. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Brian Pedrotti. He's going to make the first two presentations, and I've got the last one.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the board. Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. The first proposal is the Trosh General Plan Amendment. It's located at 2290 Hutton Road, approximately 500 feet southwest of Highway 166 and Highway 101 intersection. The proposal is to amend the land use ordinance to change a limitation on a use standard in the commercial service land use category to allow for agricultural processing, specifically to this property, which would allow the site to be developed as a wood chipping facility for receiving and processing of green material other than produced on site. The aerial shows Highway 101 adjacent to the site with some of the other adjacent uses throughout the area. The zoning, again, is commercial service. See around it, you've got a mix of agricultural to the east and south and residential suburban to the northwest. There is a approved site plan for the landscaping storage yard that's under construction right now. They're currently requesting building permits for that particular business. This is a photo of the site looking to the north. I'm just going to run through a few photographs here. This is to the northwest, and then a view to the west. The Planning Commission at their March 11, 2004 meeting recommended to the Board of Supervisors to adopt the negative declaration and approval of the land use ordinance amendment as shown in the exhibits and based on the recommended findings. That concludes staff's report on the Trosh General Plan Amendment.
Is there any question? Seeing none, then go ahead and go to the. We'll get all three of them introduced now, and then we'll open public comment on all three.
The next amendment is entitled the Anderson Amendment. It's located at the northeast corner of Willow Road and Guadalupe Road. The proposal is to amend the land use element to change the land use category from agricultural to residential rural, and also to amend the ag and open space element and change the land use map from agricultural to large lot rural, which would also add planning area standards that have been included in the exhibits. The land use category is currently agricultural, and the proposal is residential rural. It's surrounded by residential zoning. This was designated agricultural at the time that the land use ordinance and land use amendment was adopted because of the ag preserve contract that was originally on the site. That contract is no longer in effect. A notice of non-renewal was filed, and it's run its time. And now the it is now proposed for zoning to the same as the surrounding uses. The existing uses around the site include residences, nurseries, lemon orchards, avocado orchards. You can see Highway 1 in the lower left corner. Again, to run through a few pictures, this is a view to the southeast, standing on Guadalupe Road toward Willow Road. This is a site from Guadalupe looking through the lemon orchard, which is currently abandoned. And then a view along the north boundary. You see the eucalyptus trees on the north side and the old lemon orchard on the right side. There are planning area standards that have been included, and these include street lighting plan, monarch butterfly survey, botanical survey, noise study, soil borings, and agricultural buffers. Again, the Planning Commission recommended at their March 11th meeting to adopt a negative declaration and approve the amendment as shown in the exhibits based on the recommended findings.
Question? Seeing none.
The last request is a request by the County of San Luis Obispo, and it is to correct a land use category of public facilities that was placed on privately owned property adjacent to the men's colony. The proposal is to change the land use category from public facilities to agriculture consistent with the surrounding properties. It is to correct an incorrect designation that was placed on the property at the time of the LUE adoption. The reason for the proposal is the site is privately held. It was inadvertently designated public facilities because it was adjacent to the men's colony and it was assumed to be publicly held at that time. The agriculture land use category is contiguous, and the change is recommended to be consistent with the private ownership and the contiguous land use category. The Planning Commission did recommend to your Board of Supervisors approval of the amendment as shown in the exhibit. That would conclude my staff presentation.
You didn't go take pictures like the other staff people did?
Nope.
She sent Caruso out and you got lost.
And they all came out too dark.
Can I ask you a question, though? That little piece of property basically is almost the old railroad right-of-way, or there's an unloading area, if I'm not mistaken, in Highway 1, and then you got the entrance to the men's colony. Is that not correct? Is that the piece that's in?
It's actually the other side. It's got a bunch of residences on them.
Yeah, there's both sides of the road.
Right.
And my question is, although I'm not going to argue with it, make an egg. It's not an ag-viable piece of property. It doesn't meet anything to do with ag.
Not really, but agriculture was the closest thing that would allow the use that's there right now on the larger piece, which is a number of residences, to continue to exist. If we had taken it to some other zoning, like residential rural or residential suburban, some of those residences would have had to have been taken down.
Which direction is San Luis on that map?
To the left. I mean, to the right.
Towards the camera.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on which way you're looking.
I was going to say, who's left?
Yeah.
Who's camera?
That's the only question I had. I just thought it was kind of odd because even rural lands would have been a better issue than agriculture. But we're all right with it. Is there any other questions? That concludes what you have?
That concludes.
Okay. I want to go to the public then. Karen Brooks.
Good afternoon. Karen Brooks here from the Air Pollution Control District. First, we'd like to reiterate our support of the Troche project, as indicated in our letters to Cannon and Associates in 2002, and also our county memo in 2003. The district, as you know, has been working closely with the South County community over the past several years in trying to develop adequate green waste alternatives, eliminating the need for backyard waste burning. Backyard burning, as you know, can result in excessive smoke and the release of hazardous air pollutants, toxic air pollutants, and has been traditionally the largest source of complaints in the district history. Our analysis estimated that emissions from non-agricultural open burning, if left uncontrolled, would have reached hundreds of tons per year of ozone precursors, toxics, carbon monoxide, and particulate matter by 2003. With the successful implementation of alternatives to burning, the county is expected to achieve a 50% reduction in the amount of backyard burning and a significant decrease in unhealthy emissions. The proposed green waste drop-off and composting yard will help serve the South County community's needs for green waste management options. Over the past 4 years, the APCD is aggressively involved on developing feasible green waste alternatives throughout the county and in South County especially. These efforts have included organizing the community chipping events, hosting free composting workshops, funding a community garden project, funding community chippers, and promoting the expansion of curbside pickup of green waste. In addition, through our discussions with the Napomo Community Green Waste Advisory Committee, we've received extensive community support for a local green waste drop-off facility. Therefore, we feel that the proposed green waste drop-off and chipping composting facility on Hutton Road will serve as a critical element for providing adequate green waste alternatives to the South County community. For these reasons, we urge the board to approve amending the land use ordinance and the request by Stephen Renee Troche. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this item. Take any questions the APCD would.
Thank you. Okay. Deanne Scheffler, did you want to speak? Okay. Everything's all right then? Thank you. With that, then, we'll close it, public hearing, and bring it back to the board. And I think we'll take one, unless there's a request, we'll take one motion on all, tentative motion on all three items.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Sajjan, seconded by Mr. Ryan. Roll call, please.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Ryan?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mrs. Pinard?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
I don't like the end.
But due to the request that I have by county council, we should sit here till 4:30. But other than that, we have concluded our business for the day, and we stand adjourned.
Well, Jack can just stay down here till 4:30, can't he?